which is the 2016-17 sport fishing regulation proposals. This is a briefing and a public hearing. So, Mr. Burley, sir. And Chris.
He's watching you now. He's watching you now. Something you did. Tell him to come up here.
You could sit right next to me and slap me.
No, I will do that.
For the record, Craig Burley, Fish Management Division Manager. And as you indicated, we're here to discuss the sport fishing regulations for the 2016-17 process and also to take public testimony. So what we're going to do today is briefly touch on the process that we've used for the sport rules, talk about the timeline and public involvement that has occurred to this point. And then what we'd like to do is staff will provide a summary of written comment on some particular popular topics. We won't brief you on comments we've received on every proposal. We want to focus the majority of the time here today for the public testimony. So, again, this is the second year in a three-year schedule. We're focused this year on Puget Sound and coastal freshwater fishing rules. And next year we will be bringing forward marine fish, forage fish, and shellfish rules. These rules that you're going to be hearing comment on today are centered around critical conservation needs or recreational opportunity. So we started this rulemaking in March with accepting proposals from the public. In July through November, we also had a North Coast advisory group that focused on several of our proposals that you'll be hearing about a little bit later on in the briefing. We did conduct public comment on the proposals during the August through November 4 time period. We had four public meetings, and in September we briefed you on each of the proposals that are in the package. There's 50 proposals in total, and today we'll be focused on the public hearing. We'll be bringing recommendations to the Commission in December for action and at the December 11-12 meeting, and then these rules would take effect July 1 of 2016. So we've received just under 3,000 comments on the 50 proposals, and again, we'll summarize comments on some of the popular proposals. We have with me here today Chris Donnelly, our Region 1 Fish Program Manager. He'll be carrying forward with the work on the cross-regional issues, and Annette Hoffman, Regional Fish Program Manager for Region 4, and Steve Teasfield, Regional Program Manager for Region 6, will be talking about Puget Sound and Coastal proposals. And then Chris Donnelly will wrap up with one proposal that we have as a holdover from last process. I wanted to focus your attention for just a minute on your notebook. In your notebook, you have the materials for this briefing, and they're under tab 15. And what you have there is a summary document that was prepared on November 4th, and that includes summary of written comment that we had received as of that time. It's organized by each of the proposals, and you also have the WAC language that was filed with the code reviser for the specific rule proposals that we're discussing. So what we'd like to do now is move into the cross-regional proposals. Chris?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. For the record, Chris Donnelly, Region 1 Fish Program Manager. Before we get into this, maybe give you a little bit of the layout of the slides as they come up. We'll introduce the actual reg change that's proposed. The next slide after that will have the pros, cons, and general comments that were captured from the public. So I'll cover those proposals that are cross-regional and not specific. Clarify the fly fishing definition. adding language about materials that may be used to construct flies. So pro comments seems reasonable given the prolific use of foam and rubber. So I think we all know that flies have evolved over time, and fly anglers are quite creative and looking for new materials, and we're just trying to catch up with the rule, and that's what that individual is saying. Con, waste of time and money. And then general comments, that some folks think the language needs even more updating. Want to add beads, which is a common use on flies. So I'll leave it with that, and we probably have a little bit of wordsmithing we could do with that one. Remove internal combustion motors on small streams. This was back in the last rule process as well. This is really about taking internal combustion motors off of streams that are so small it's impractical to even allow them. The comments from the public, pro, support making regulations less convoluted. It reduces the text in the pamphlet. And the con is use a boat length and horsepower restriction instead. And I hearken back to the issue of the size of the streams that are involved here. And then in general, define what is meant by small streams or small flows. Allow harvest of grass carp. We started in with grass carp 20 or 30 years ago as a measure to control aquatic vegetation. And in some places, they've become too abundant and overgrazed. And so there's two lakes that are listed there that we would propose to allow harvest, both Campbell and Lone. The pro, one lake that has grass carp that's been mentioned in Grays Harbor County that the public would like to see added is Duck Lake. Consider mandatory retention similar to Steelhead. And then some support in basically testifying to what we believe is true in Lone Lake, that it's been overgrazed considerably by grass carp. And then in the con, don't add Duck Lake. In general, only adopt if the rest of the fish population is not impacted. Allow retention of stray hatchery steelhead. This simply allows anglers to keep hatchery steelhead that are caught incidentally to other fisheries when a fishery is open, and it reduces the impact for those fish to stray out and spawn with wild steelhead. Pros, it's a win-win for recreational anglers and conservation. It's the responsible thing to do. Don't consider it as part of the daily salmonid limit. Don't require it to be recorded on the catch record card. Con will lead to the abuse and catching of non-stray steelhead, will negatively impact diversity. And in general, if you don't plant them, you won't have a problem. So this one probably generated as many public comments as any, and is providing additional year-round opportunity. We heard a really large number of the public at the beginning of this process requesting that we find additional places to provide year-round opportunity. That list of 10 lakes is then captured here in your table. It's also in your binders. And pro, a lot of the lakes here in western Washington are experiencing summer algal blooms that make them unfishable. So we put them on this list, and the public is aware of that, and they're in support of going year-round because that allows them to fish them during times when there are not algal blooms. There was a request to also add Lake Whatcom, and then Summit Lake. With the pros for Summit Lake wanted the increased opportunity for kokanee fishing as well as smallmouth bass, and they believe that more legal anglers on the water would help decrease theft. And I think, as you'll see later today, there's a lot of con to Summit Lake. Biggest issue we've heard from the homeowners out there is their concern about losing the tradition of their fisherman's breakfast and the revenue associated with that for the homeowners association. Then we need to run an impact statement to understand what the overall environmental impact of changing that rule is. There's a number of water quality concerns that could be exacerbated by increased year-round effort on the lake. There is some concern about year-round lake allowing increased theft to properties around the lake, and then there needs to be greater cleanup of the boat launch that they're not confident the state of Washington will do. And in general, the request for more areas, request for more areas in these waters for elderly and disabled to fish. So really kind of a divergent comment from the rest, but asking again for more opportunity. Increased trout fishing opportunity in streams. This is simply adding additional days where we think there's opportunity without conservation risk. And the two streams were Flett and Leech Creek. Comments we heard from the public is native fish have been extirpated for a long time. There's no negative impact. Support increasing trout fishing opportunity. On the con, Flett Creek cutthroat have greater value to recreational anglers in Puget Sound in the saltwater. Small streams cannot take much pressure. And we need more sanctuaries for fish. In general, comment, make them fly fishing only or don't open them. Wattify trout fishing opportunities in select western Washington streams. Again, this is consistent with the stream strategy. Every time we go into a rulemaking process, we're looking for things that might have gotten skipped over or omitted in the stream strategy, and we're picking up those portions. And typically what these are portions of stream above an anadrome that we can allow for angling opportunity for resident rainbows or resident salmonids. And in other places, we'll be closing it because we have anadromous concerns. Pros, include Leland Lake for bass and catfish. Include the North Fork of the Skykomish. Include more catch and release opportunity. Keep the upper North Fork Sauk and tributaries a quality catch and release fishery. Cons, counterproductive to native steelhead. Keep upper North Fork Sauk and tributaries catch and release. And then general, make all of these streams that are proposed here under selective gear rules. Another one that we heard a large outcry from the public about was increasing selective gear fishing opportunity in western Washington. We selected six lakes in Snohomish County that were provided for consideration to the public, and here's the comments we got back. Yes for Chain and Martha Lakes. More opportunity to catch holdover trout. A two fish daily limit encourages anglers to release fish, and we should consider a selective water endorsement license. The cons, limits trout fishing. And the majority of anglers for these lakes fish from the banks with bait, and that this would impact them. And in general, bait fishing from shore is more effective, and many locals don't have a boat to troll. Require mandatory hatchery steelhead retention. We feel this reduces potential for unwanted genetic and competitive interactions with wild steelhead, and it applies in streams where there are hatchery steelhead stocked. In your part of the world, yes, sir, we're still mandatory. And we have the dates set the way that... Yep.
Okay.
Yep, we got that right. Okay. It took me a while to get it right, but I got it right.
Okay.
So, yeah. I might have been the... I set the mold now, so everybody else will get it right the first time. So, moving on to comments about this. The pros need to see if wild fish can make it on their own. Maintain a daily limit on harvestable fish. Yes for streams with recoverable wild steelhead component. And the cons, limits the time one can fish, especially for multi-day fishing trips. Concern is if you catch your limit, you're done early in the day, and what are you going to do for the rest of that day if you're there for a week? And in general, make it a statewide rule, which actually this proposal would do. Problem with an increase or change in steelhead limit, and problem with change in rules on wastage, meaning that if you catch a spawned out dark steelhead, you really don't want to keep it. So some issues that we've consistently heard from anglers about that. And with that, I don't have any others to cover at this point.
So at this time, I'd ask that Annette Hoffman and Steve Teasfield come up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Annette Hoffman, the Regional Fish Program Manager for Region 4. We have just a couple of proposals in Region 4 to go over. The first is Pass Lake, where the We're looking at allowing a two-poll opportunity. Currently, it does not allow for the two-poll endorsement, and this would provide some additional recreational opportunity. The comments that we heard, the pros would be that it would not ruin the experience, where the major comment on the con side was that it might upset the local experience. Interesting, there are several comments that they were wondering how it was going to look for people fly fishing with two poles. The second one is Rattlesnake Lake. This was a lake that had been catch and keep for a long time, and the last cycle, the public requested it to be catch and release. So it is currently catch and release, and now there are some folks who would like to see it go back to a catch and keep opportunity. The proposal is now to have a 2-fish daily limit with a 14-inch minimum length. The comments that we heard in favor of this is that the area wants to keep that opportunity that they've had in the past, that it's important for family trips with kids, that there were some questions about different kinds of modifications that could be made to the proposal, and that non-native fish, this is a put-and-take lake, and so there are folks that would like those non-native fish, you know, to be taken when they're put there. The opposition to the proposal was that this is the only catch-and-release lake in King County, and they'd like to see the catch-and-release regulation have a chance to see how that plays out, and the concern that the lake would be fished out by the summer's end. Next, we have Mill Pond, which is a King County water, which is a juvenile-only water except for the free fishing weekend, at which it's allowed to have adults fishing there. And this proposal would remove that adult exception and make it juvenile-only water all the time. So there was some agreement with the proposal, but there was quite a bit of opposition that free fishing weekend is important to the Auburn Parks Department for implementation of their senior derby, for which they do some stocking of the lake for that, which would benefit juvenile fishing post free fishing weekend. And then we have Sammamish Lake. The proposal is to remove hook restrictions. A number of years ago, there were U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed a listing of the kokanee in Lake Sammamish. They have since withdrawn that. And in response to that proposal, this restriction was put in place to protect the kokanee as a measure to help with the conservation. And the population has seen some good returns and some not so good returns, but this proposal, we feel that the opportunity lost is a good time to bring it back, and that our supplementation program that we're doing to support the kokanee in Lake Sammamish is enough to keep the conservation needs met. The in favor of it, whereas this is a rule simplification, and we'll make it simpler in the pamphlet, and will increase the retention of cutthroat predators, which will also be beneficial for kokanee and other listed species. The cons are the feeling that maybe we still need to continue more of the conservation efforts, and this would be that, and it is not needed. The removal of the hook restriction is not needed to access cutthroat. Are there any questions for the Region 4 proposals?
Thank you.
about the quantity of people in the room. We do have a number limitation to the, and unfortunately, we have to apologize to everyone that we don't have the appropriate level of seating available. We never know how many people are going to come and want to testify. So can we possibly start the public testimony and let people talk with us? And then, because I know there's quite a few people here to just testify on the Summit Lake issue. And then you probably would like to leave, yes? Or so maybe we should just be courteous to all of you who are going to have to stand if we go through the briefing first. But maybe I'm trying to figure out, we do have a legal size limit and the number of people we can hold in a room. It's a safety thing. And I keep seeing people filtering in, and it's getting worrisome.
Yeah, if you bear, I think that's a very good idea, and for all the right reasons. We just have to pull out the forms from those, so it'll take a moment, and that way you can on some late talk and free up. You guys okay?
Sorry, we just didn't know.
That is number 14.
They're all, yeah, everybody's here.
So on item 14, it was requested, and it's fine, it's a bit irregular, but we're all a bit irregular. folks who want to testify on item 14 to not only identify themselves, but who they represent, that's fine. It's not going to be part of it. We're getting...
This is Brad. While the resort students, I would like to make a comment on this thing. And I guess this is in general, and for the fish biologists, I thoroughly understand with the Endangered Species Act and with more people on a limited resource that you have to keep writing all these regulations to try and get the most out of the resource, but please, please keep in mind brevity is the soul of wit on a lot of this stuff, and the simpler that we can keep these regulations for applicable,
there he goes
please,
again.
Please attempt to do it, because I know fishing in my part of the world, I grew up, we fished a lot, and it finally, with endangered species, we had to quit fishing, because the type of creek fishing we were doing, it just went away.
This is it.
And, boy, every time I grab a fishing pole, I got to think I need to turn these hands so I'm not violating some laws. So, if you would, just try and keep that in mind.
Oh, right, right, oh,
at least they'll be able to leave.
Yeah. I was thinking, right.
Simpler is better. If at all possible.
Okay, we've got the Summit Lake one pulled out, and we might have missed a few, so I'm sure you'll let us know if we did at the end. So we will start again, and I'm going to enforce this pretty strictly, the 3 minutes, because for, again, obvious reasons. So limit it to 3 minutes. When you hear the beeper go off, that's the timer for you. And I'll call you up two at a time. Please sit two and then rotate it out. So we will start with Carrie Hart and Bob Christensen, please.
Well, Mr. Smith and members of the commission, I'm happy to be here this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to make a comment. I'm here because I'm a resident of Summit Lake, and there is a proposal before the commission to have year-round fishing on a variety of lakes, including Summit Lake. And you have quite a bit of information that we provided to you. And I'm not going to go over every item because we've obviously got a lot of people here that can do that. I think the primary issue we're concerned about is that Summit Lake is the only lake on that list of year-round fishing proposals where the residents actually drink the water. That's our only source of public water. And that is something we want to have considered by the commission, because sometimes when you go down these proposals, it's a slippery slope, and pretty soon the environment is impacted, and certainly the residents on the lake are concerned about that. There's another one that isn't on the letter that my wife and I presented to the commission or to the Washington Department of Fish and Game, and that's the security issues that are associated with year-round fishing. We also have a considerable concern about theft on the lake, and we feel that additional people during the winter season will contribute to that. We've talked to the members of the Fish and Game. They don't have enough manning or monetary resources to regulate the additional fishing that would be required and the rules, plus the Sheriff's Department does not have the similar manning nor resources to patrol the lake. Because the residents on the lake, a lot of them don't live there year-round, and so there's a lot of empty homes that we're concerned about theft on the lake. There are a significant number of other issues, and I'll let some of the other people from Summit Lake address those, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. Certainly want you to consider the wishes of the Summit Lake residents. Thank you.
Thank you. We get it. Well, how about you do faux claps, okay? So, Craig Edwards, please. And then, Carrie, you can just keep. Yeah, that's it.
Good morning. My name is Christensen. I'm a resident of Summit Lake. I'd like to expand on one of Terry's points, and it's the major one. It's the elephant in the room. Your task is to balance costs against benefits, risk against reward. The 600 families of Summit Lake depend on the lake as their sole source of drinking water. It is their McAllister Springs. It is their Tolt Reservoir. And for the commission to consider expanding the amount of pollution that goes into the lake for the limited benefit of sports fishing is almost unthinkable. Using two-cycle engines on that lake introduces unknown quantities of benzene. Benzene is a known carcinogenic, and increasing the amount of that carcinogenic dumped in our drinking water increases to an unknown risk level future cancers of my children and the children of the others who depend on Summit Lake. As Terry said, it's the only lake on your list that provides a sole source of drinking water. I'd ask you to no more increase the pollution going into that lake than you would increase it building a refinery on Tolt Reservoir or dumping benzene into McAllister Springs. Thank you.
Thank you. Judy Hart, please.
Okay, my name is Craig Edwards. I'm the president of Summit Lake Community Association, a nonprofit organization. I'm against year-round fishing at Summit Lake for a multitude of reasons. I will limit my comments due to the time frames. This proposal, I believe, is unfair. It is unfair because the process of which we who are against it were notified in the middle of the process, not at the start, by the WDFW representatives who started this process, James Lucy and Larry Phillips. They knew the proper ways to contact, and we were affected as they had to supposedly learn from the mistakes at Long Lake. They waited until the process was started and in place before contacting me in March. The president of Long Lake came to one of the two meetings held at our community club and spoke directly to Director Unsworth on the unfairness of the process, and to which the Long Lake residents and the city of Lacey were treated by the WDFW. They were contacted after the process was done. He stated that the promises were made by the WDFW were not followed through with and kept. We, the Summit Lake residents, foolishly thought meeting with the WDFW at our community club with over 150 people there against year-round fishing at each meeting would help our cause. We were clearly mistaken. WDFW Director Unsworth clearly stated at our presentation that he did not agree with much of what we had presented to him. He stated that Idaho has all lakes year-round. My hope is that you are all Washingtonians and make your decisions as fish commissioners, as representatives of the state of Washington, not Idaho. My wish is that you know this unfairly made proposal. My wish is that you throw out this unfairly made proposal and try it again a later time. So that way it would be fair. Started at the start of the process, not at the end. Because of the unfair process, a true Washingtonian, Senator Tim Sheldon, is in the process of drafting a bill to exclude Summit Lake from year-round fishing. Senator Tim Sheldon is listening to our plea. I hope you all will, too, and stop this unfair process at this point. I am also opposed to any extension of time to the season. I believe any extension of time should and would require a brand-new proposal, which everyone would properly be notified at the start of the process. That would be fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, Chair.
How long is the season now?
I believe it's 6 months.
Does that sound right, Chris? Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Cindy Sundstrom, please. I'm sorry, Judy. No.
Yep. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Judy Hart, and I am now a current resident on Summit Lake. A little bit of background. My husband and I have written an 8-point letter to you as well as the director. I will mention a point that is not in the letter. I was born and raised in eastern Washington, Okanagan County, and have hunted and fished over there all my life. I also have spent years living in the state of Idaho and have fished for years over there. I mention that because the director, Unworth, who has been here a relatively short period of time, has indicated he would like to have year-round fishing here in western Washington and Washington as in Idaho. I can assure you there is a far difference in culture as well as population between eastern Washington and Idaho and this narrow strip of highly populated, dense population in western Washington. On Summit Lake, and I will be specific as to that lake, hundreds of families live out there. Our lots are 35 feet wide, which I never dreamed, coming from eastern Washington, that people could live on such a tiny lot. 35 feet, a few of the lots are 70 feet, with boat docks going out, with some bass that have recently been planted there. The fishermen, from my personal observation of fishing on Summit Lake, and it seems like bass fishermen come up around our docks, the assertiveness and I could go so far as to say arrogance in the demeanor of these fishermen, some fishermen, not all, is so far different than what I have ever been used to as a little country bumpkin coming from Okanagan County or southern Idaho. It's a difference in culture, and it is a difference in population. We are like a little crowded city living over there, drinking out of our little lake, and to add so many more people to it wanting to fish year-round, I believe, is inappropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Patrick Patterson, please. And if I don't get one of your names right, I apologize. If you're all named Smith, I'd get them all right. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Cindy Sundstrom, and I, too, am a resident of Summit Lake and am strongly opposed to year-round fishing. Additionally, I am opposed to any modification to the current fishing season and schedule. And aside from all the other issues that my four residents have spoken about, pollution, garbage, criminal activity, invasive aquatic species, etc., I'm speaking because I was really appalled at the dismissive attitude that the residents of Summit Lake received by upper department management at a meeting. It was as if a broad brush was to be taken and painted across Washington to mirror that of Idaho, for which that lacks insight to the uniqueness of the state and does Summit Lake an injustice. WDFW's vision statement speaks of conservation of Washington's fish and wildlife resources and ecosystems. DFW further defines conservation as the protection, preservation, management, or restoration of natural environments and ecological communities that inhabit them. Summit Lake is a unique ecosystem that has already been contaminated by the department's planting of fish species that were never part of that natural environment. It seems as though it's an ongoing effort to achieve the mission statement, which is to preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish, wildlife, and ecosystems while providing sustainable fish and wildlife recreation and commercial opportunities. Perhaps there is a bit more focus on providing recreational opportunities and less on preserving the ecosystems. 8 months ago when this all began, I was told it was all about the kokanee fishery for the reason for Summit Lake to be turned into year-round. Subsequently, that statement was rescinded, and then it was suggested that the bass fishermen were put up to the push of having Summit Lake open. Well, in 2004, biologists discovered that bass were found in Summit Lake that were not present in previous years. It was suggested that perhaps it was the bass fishermen that may have planted them there. In the 2011 Reviews of Fishery Science publication titled Smallmouth Bass in Pacific Northwest, A Threat to Native Species, A Benefit for Anglers, the authors acknowledge that, and I quote, while an important sport fish in the Pacific Northwest, smallmouth bass is a species with considerable potential impact to native species communities and freshwater ecosystems.
Thank you. Cindy. Appreciate that. Vaughn Hodgkins, please. And Patrick.
Commissioners. I'm here to voice my concern about converting Summit Lake to year-round fishing. Obviously, I got the T-shirt.
The mics are broke.
Can you hear me? Oh, okay. My issue has to do with opening the boat launch year-round. Opening the lake to year-round fishing. Okay. I've been a resident of Summit Lake for the last 7 years and enjoy the peace and beauty of the lake. As with most other residents, I draw my water from the lake and have water rights from the Department of Ecology. The concern is access to non-residents will have at all times of the year, specifically when they bring their large boats from the ocean to clean them and empty their tanks. Some of the larger fishing vessels have been known to empty their septic systems as well. This behavior will have an adverse effect on the safety of our drinking water. The lake has a speed limit of 5 miles an hour until 11 a.m. and reverts back to it in the early evening. This rule ensures peace is maintained on the lake for night and morning hours, which I think is appropriate. However, having the boat launch open year-round will mean there will be no speed limits at any time of day or any time of year. This will greatly impact the quality of life. Also, having no speed limits at night could create potential safety issues. As it is, the boat launch is poorly maintained and almost never supervised by the WDFW and to a lesser degree by the Sheriff's Department. Opening the boat launch year-round will exacerbate the problem. We have learned from your staff that there is no money in the budget for maintenance or supervision of the boat launch year-round. As such, it does not make good business sense to keep it open year-round. In closing, let me emphasize that my most important concern is the quality of our drinking water. They represent the problem is having the boat launch open year-round, granting access to non-residents who do not have any positive regard for the safety or quality of life for Summit Lake residents. Our lake is not a toilet for others to use to dump their waste and contaminate the water by cleaning out their boats. The lake is being open year-round. The lake being open year-round would mean no speed limits on the lake as well. Thank you for hearing my concerns. I hope the Board of Commissioners can arrive at a decision that will better serve both anglers and the residents of Summit Lake. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Michael Patterson, please. And Vaughn, it's yours.
I don't know if this is appropriate or not. I'm speaking for Bruce and Sharon Roberts. They have
pictures. Yeah, you could just pass those to Tammy. She'll have them.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks so much. Bruce and Sharon Roberts couldn't be here, so they've asked me to speak on behalf. I am speaking on behalf of them. They live at 413 Summit Lake Road. They're out of state. You've already heard from several residents of our opposition to the proposal to make Summit Lake a year-round fishing lake. The main focus you've heard is with regard to concerns about the quality of the water in the lake, since it's only available household water source for the vast majority. Bruce and Sharon would like me to address additional concerns of Summit Lake residents, and that concern for the security is something that's very important to them. For those of you who have never been to Summit Lake, it's located off Highway 8, approximately 6.5 miles beyond Highway 101, splits towards Shelton. We've drawn a map, admittedly not to scale, but the main points to show you are that the road around the lake, approximately 8 miles in length, is very curvy and has many various elevations. Old saying, picture's worth 1,000 words, so we have a couple pictures, about eight of them, so you probably have 8,000 words. The first page on the lake shows the entrance to the public boat ramp. On each of the following four pages, the first picture shows driveway accesses in and out of homes and residences. And on the following four, they show driveway access. Let's see, second photo shows homes that are accessed from that driveway. As these pictures illustrate, access to the vast majority of dwellings around our lake, whether they're seasonal summertime cabins or year-round homes, typically secluded in trees and down steep driveways. In most cases, when driving the road around the lake, it's not possible to know if a dwelling is occupied. From the lake, however, it's extremely easy to access from a slow cruise around the shoreline, as many fishermen typically do, and observe which dwellings appear to be occupied and those that are not. Any intent on robbery can easily mimic the actions of fishermen to scope out the next victim. A fairly large group of Summit Lake property owners are of baby boomer era. They have worked hard to be able to afford to purchase a dream home, let alone to afford the property taxes. Being retired with more flexibility, they enjoy traveling during the late fall and winter months. They have grave concerns about their homes being targeted for theft while traveling, and many neighbors that are not year-round residents, so they can be relied on. They're not there, so they can't be relied on to watch the property. The Summit Lake community adopted the Neighborhood Watch Program several years ago. However, it does not deter thieves when a house is nestled into some trees. Our community has a good relationship with the Thurston County Sheriff's Department. With our homes being so far from Central Olympia area, response time is very lengthy. So that's from Bruce and Sharon. That's just a final, if I got a second. I kind of feel like we're still here in the United States of America, and this seems to be a majority-driven country. I don't think there's a majority of 10 or 12 fishing people that want to come out and disturb the 400 to 600 people who have bought into this into the property and this ideal.
Thank you, Vaughn.
Yep.
And Jonathan White, please. And Michael?
Good morning. I'm Michael Patterson. I'm a resident of Summit Lake. I'm also a big fan of hunting and fishing, but I also want to offer a couple reasons why I think it's a bad idea to open Summit Lake to year-round fishing. First of all, it's a regular occurrence that our water system, the intake valves and the equipment out there gets fouled by the fishermen, their hooks, their lines, their anchors, and it either needs to be repaired or replaced. When this happens in July, it's a minor annoyance. I was going to go swimming anyway. But when it happens in January, it's a significant event because now I have to figure out how to get in the lake and repair that. And that's not just me. That happens regularly around the lake. Second, it was brought up, and unfortunately the 3 minutes ran out on her, but the bass fishing is an issue. In the state's own data, bass are not native to Summit Lake, and I think yesterday you guys spent a good bit of time talking about invasive and non-native species. Here in this case, it's a accepted theory by the state and the residents that some bass fishermen put bass in the lake a few years ago to be able to fish them there. Then when the state did come out and talk to us at the community association, they said that one of the main fisheries that would benefit from extending this, particularly the March and the November timeframe, would be bass. So here we are rewarding somebody dropping in the invasive species. We're going to reward them by giving them additional fishing time in Summit Lake, which is a bad idea. And then finally, the unintended consequences. I don't think anybody thinks that the fishery will suffer if there was year-round fishing. You guys monitor that. You're the experts. But what would happen to the community, I think, is important. And hopefully someone else will talk about this for the full 3 minutes. But the Fisherman's Breakfast really funds the Summit Lake Community Association, and that's done on opening day. That's the majority of our income. We have a very synergistic, beneficial relationship with the fishermen. Then the Summit Lake Community Association keeps the boat launch clean, keeps it tidy. You know, we do the whole lake upkeep, the whole thing going on there. And if there was no opening day, if there was year-round fishing, there'd be no Fisherman's Breakfast. Without the Fisherman's Breakfast, the Summit Lake Community Association would collapse because there's not enough money to keep the thing running. And then I think the fishery would suffer, the community would suffer, the lake would suffer, the boat ramp would suffer. There's a lot of unintended consequences to opening this up to year-round fishing that go well beyond whether the kokanee and the trout would be okay. We don't have any issues with that, and we'd just like you all to consider the range of reasons not to do this versus the benefit of a few fishermen who would get a few more days of fishing in per year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. And there's one last one, well, other than you, Jonathan, but there's no name. So if that's one of your names, it just said the comment against opening Summit Lake for year-round fishing. So I
had also signed up, but apparently I'm not in your...
Yeah, I had signed up, too.
So,
but I put my name on the paper.
Yeah, my name's on the paper also.
Well, but I don't know if they didn't write comments on the bottom. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, that...
We'll have to go through that. But if you
want to
call him up,
sure. Yeah. And then, we'll figure it out. So let me... So the one that's not... So, sir, you can come up, and then Jonathan, too, and then when they're done, then...
Thank you. I'm Jonathan White. I'm a resident of the lake, and I'm also against year-round fishing. I agree with many of the comments that have already been made, but the one I'd like to highlight is just DFW's goal number 3, which is promote community character. And I think you know Summit Lake has a very strong community association, but also a very strong and entrenched community character that I don't think has been talked enough about with DFW. I would like to see the process started over again, and I'd like to see DFW encouraged to work with the community on this issue so that they clearly understand what Summit Lake is all about and how that community can support whatever initiatives they wish to promote into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. And, sir, if you could identify yourself, we'll try to find your sheet, and that will be the mechanism until we mix and match everybody. So, yeah, you come up, and then, sir, you identify yourself.
My name is Ron Lazera.
Okay.
Representing myself, however, I am the past president of the Summit Lake Community Association and the current vice president of the Summit Lake Community Association, and I would like to elaborate on the financial impact of this decision and how it affects the fabric of life at Summit Lake. Our annual operating budget for the community association, it's not a homeowners association, it's a community association. It's not mandatory. It's something we participate in because we want to. The budget is between $5,000 and $6,000 annually. Our fisherman's breakfast, which is held every year on opening day of the traditional fishing season, accounts for nearly 50% of that annual budget. What do we use that budget for? We use that to better the community and to lessen the financial impact on the society as a whole for operating or for living at Summit Lake, in that we have installed fire hydrants out there, our dollar putting in dry hydrants going into the lake. We have developed the Block Watch program, which helps minimize policing activities or the need for policing activities out there. We participate in food drives and supporting the local food bank here with activities that we do out there. We maintain the community center out there, which is used as a community outreach by public officials, fire department,
Chief North comes out there, John Snaza, our sheriff comes out there. We have DNR that's come out there and talked to us about issues before, the Department of Ecology, and several state and county elected officials have done that. We also are highly involved in public safety. We are responsible, using that budget, for putting on the addresses on all the docks out there. So if there's a problem on the lake where somebody needs assistance, they can get on a cell phone and give reference to where they are on the lake. We also clean the public boat launch there. We do it there. Every other Saturday, a group of us go out there and we police it. We pick up all the litter that's out there. We also police the entire lake area on an annual basis. We put together crews that go out and pick up all the litter that is out there. We do many beneficial things. We also have many social events that we do out there for the community as a whole. Without the revenue coming from the fisherman's breakfast, we're bankrupt in 3 years, predicated upon just the cash flow as it is right now. You know, we no longer have the money to pay our property taxes and do all these things. I think that's a loss. I think it's a loss not only to our community, but it's a loss to the county, and it's a loss to just society as a whole. And I beg you to think about that. There's enough other lakes in close proximity to Summit Lake that have year-round fishing that we don't have to sacrifice Summit Lake and its uniqueness to have another place to fish. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. And there was somebody else? Okay. And, sir, if you could identify yourself.
My name's Robert Carter. Is this working?
Yeah.
It is, okay. My name's Robert Carter. My wife and I live at 1723 Summit Lake. We've been residents out there since 1986, and I've utilized the lake since 1975. I think I can offer you a little bit of a unique perspective on what's going on out there. I'm a professional scuba diver, and I do maintenance and repairs on the water system in the lake. It's the only viable water source out there is lake water. I don't know how to put this in words that would stay with you for a duration, but you would be amazed at the garbage in the lake. You would just be totally amazed from car bodies and stuff left over from the original harvesting days of the trees when they had a train track out there, to the beer cans, to the plastic. And that's a unique situation because the bottom of the lake has a sediment 3 inches to maybe 8 feet deep. So most of the stuff sinks. But there's still it's just amazing the amount of crap in the lake. Most of the work that I get is caused by water systems damaged or turned over by things being tangled up in fishing hooks and fishing lines. So there, I think, you know, more use is probably not going to be the solution to a problem here. We have, my wife and I live out there. We try to leave on the busy weekends during the summer. We have a situation, I mean, if you can put this into a personal perspective, if you had somebody pull up out in the street in front of your house, turn on a radio on a large stereo at 2:30 in the morning, throw garbage out the window, and use your front yards for a latrine, you would call the sheriff's department. This is what we have going on in the lake, the death metal music at 2:30 in the morning, and it's just obnoxious. So more use until we can get that under control and a cleanup plan in place at the lake to not further damage our water supply is really in order. I mean, it's out of the question to expand use till we deal with some of these problems that we've just been tolerating for 15 or 20 years. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else that we've overlooked or got? Michelle, okay. Then could you identify yourself, please?
My name is Debbie White. Did you fill out a form?
I did. Uh-huh.
Okay. Maybe did you not put your name down?
I did put my name on it.
We'll call you this person.
Okay, great.
now you have a form.
Now I'm legal.
W-H-I-T-E, right?
Yeah, W-H-I-T-E, yeah. So, yes, I'm a Summit Lake resident, and I've been living there since 2000, actually. In 2006 is when I started to see some changes at the lake and started to ask a lot of questions. Didn't know really much about what I was seeing, but started to inquire with other lake residents. In 2008, I started to go to college. By 2010, I stopped drinking the water after my research. I, at that time, became very active in being a water watcher for South Sound, and did a lot of volunteer work for a stream team, and became very concerned about the water quality, and started to actually work really close with Department of Health, and even start to take samples. So I've been very active in taking samples and working closely with Department of Health, and I can tell you that we have exceeded the state limit with toxic algae. And that's a great concern to us. And we know that toxic algae is on the rise in our western Washington waters and actually all over. And we really need to address the seriousness of this issue and toxic algae. You know, if you go on to the Department of Health and check the health studies for Summit Lake, you'll be able to find microcystin toxin in just about every sample. Now, that's a concern. So my question would be, why would we increase? We know people, boats equals more pollution, right? It's a given. We are the ones that are creating these toxins around the water. So why would we add to that by opening the lake? Right now, the lake has a resting period. It's eutrophic. It has a time to rest, to sort of get its balance again. But you know, we're not allowing that. We're just adding to a complicated situation that's just getting worse at this time. So, you know, I used to just want to be out on the boat and play and not really, you know, wasn't too concerned, but now I'm really concerned. My concerns are not to be out on the lake playing and skiing and wakeboarding. It's to be taking samples and watching what's going on and thinking about the next seven generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. That, I guess, will end the testimony for Summit Lake. I would like to compliment the residents and friends of Summit Lake. I think this is an example of how the system should work. You have receptive ears here. You have ears that want to learn about the issues before decisions are made. And speaking just for myself, but I think for my fellow commissioners, you all spoke eloquently. You spoke to the point. To a person, you helped educate us, and I'd be happy to come to the breakfast next year. So, so with that, I don't want to seem like an impolite host of the state, but maybe a rotation of seats, unless you have a passion to hear the rest. But I can tell you, you've done your person's duty for your cause. So. Of not that it hasn't been identified. If you know,
well, you might tell them you don't know what people are going to say.
I can't answer that totally because I don't know what everybody has said. But nobody wrote it down on the sheets that you've seen us shuffling back and forth. That was a good call about doing that. We're going to take a 10-minute break, Mal, so we'll reconvene at 25 after.
I think we finished with whether or not there were any additional questions for me.
Okay. Yes, as usual, there are no controversial issues in Region 6. So we'll talk a little bit about the coastal proposals. We didn't have anything that was significant that we thought we needed to bring to your attention today outside of the North Coast steelhead regulations. Summit Lake was covered under the CROSS program. So as we got going on the rulemaking process or taking the public proposals, there were four basic topics that popped up that we saw from the public. Adopt no fishing from floating device rules on select streams, call for greater use of selective gear rules, requiring the release of all wild steelhead and trout, and finally requiring a wild steelhead harvest tag if we were going to continue down that road. We kind of wanted to get ahead of the curve a little bit if we could, and rather than having a piecemeal approach to our regulation-making process for the peninsula, we thought it would be best to try to craft something that was a little more well thought out. That at least that was our hope, that it would be more well thought out. So we decided to engage a group that we called an ad hoc North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group. I can't remember. I think we had 12 or 13 members in the group. A very diverse group of folks to help try to provide us this comprehensive package. We pushed this group extremely hard between July and September, preparing for the briefing that we gave you in Spokane last month, or 2 months ago now. And this group put together a package of proposals that required significant compromise by a number of the folks involved. And if you picked out one little piece of the package, you might find that certain members really had heartburn with that. But as a package, it was what we developed through that group and their recommendations. So rather than having just this... You have public proposals that provide for, I want selective gear on this stream during this time, and I want it on this stream. This tried to be more holistic throughout the peninsula. Those other proposals are still there, and we'll get to talking about those in a bit here. So they had a number of ideas and concepts that they wanted to talk about, and I'll highlight first the ones that are pertain to the rulemaking process that we're engaged in. And then there's some other topics that they suggested that we look at that you might call longer-term issues. And our intent is to sit down with our group again here soon and get to working on those longer-term issues. But in terms of the sports rules proposal process, the first thing that they noted to us is don't make this from here on out. Let's do this for three years or maybe 6 years, and then let's see if it's worked. And do we need to tweak it as we go forward? There aren't a lot of jet boats on the peninsula, and the group basically said, let's get ahead of that issue before it rears its head and just get them off the rivers now and be done with it. While there are a lot of good concepts in what selective gear rules means, this group had a kind of a different perspective. So their proposal was to essentially say during the steelhead season we're going to use barbless hooks. There was not as much concern about treble hooks versus single point hooks, and they felt that we could simplify it by just saying one barbless hook without providing further restrictions on whether it was a treble or a single. And a big key piece of that was that we would limit bait to times and places where the hatchery steelhead were rather than during the wild steelhead seasons, an attempt to try to lower mortality on wild steelhead. Now, that proposal did not say we were going to exclude bait during the salmon seasons. And so... There is a list on the proposal that was provided of the times and places when bait would be allowed, but essentially it was about October 1st through mid-February. So that would encompass the bulk of the salmon season and the primary times that hatchery steelhead are available in those systems. There was a fairly good agreement that the time is right to start releasing wild steelhead. With it, the group noted, though, we needed to aggressively pursue that those fish would make it to the spawning gravels and not simply be caught by other users in the basins. So it's great that we're going to be releasing them, but we want to make sure that they actually do help provide for spawning rather than harvest elsewhere. And one that was probably the most controversial was a desire to limit where folks could fish from boats. And in the group, we settled on the Ho River above Morgan's Crossing. Certainly there was some desire for the Upper Solduck and other places, but this was the package that the group was able to have mostly agreement on. Like I said, each individual component of this, you can find somebody in the group will say, gosh, I just can't get behind that piece. But as a group, this is what they put together. The longer-term issues that we still have to wrestle with, and these aren't going to be easy. We got a lot of work ahead of us, and the group may not realize that we're still going to be leaning on them to help us with these as we go forward. Considering limits on the number of guides that are allowed to operate on those North Coast streams, obviously this would require potentially legislation to enact, which means this is a significant long-term issue. I think I recall from some of our earlier discussions that there's a desire to maybe consider this on a statewide basis as well, and how the agency will go forward in pursuing this one is yet to be determined. Would we just limit it to North Coast or open it up for consideration throughout the state? Clearly, something that we can get going on now is educating the angling public on how to properly release fish. We do have some regulations in place, but the group felt that some education would be extremely valuable for anglers that may not be thinking about how their handling of the fish affects their survivability. The thought about creating an endorsement for fishing on the North Coast, this would be similar to the Columbia River endorsement and be used to fund creel surveys, research, monitoring, all of the things that we would like to be able to do that we're not necessarily capable of at this time. A number of the members of the group feel the escapement goals are too low, and they would like us to pursue a review of those goals and reestablishment, perhaps, of higher goals. Obviously, this one would require us to work with our co-managers, and will be another difficult task ahead of us. Concern that the number of wild fish that are being caught and released is decreasing productivity of those animals, that egg viability might be in jeopardy, as well as survivability of the smolts, and just an overall decline in the number of recruits for each spawner that are in the system. And the other point that I mentioned earlier about if we go to wild fish release, that we address state-tribal sharing and ensure that anything that we release is indeed going to make it up to spawn. So I've drifted a little bit off the sport rules there, but just wanted to make sure you were aware of these other items that this group thought was important for us to address as we move forward.
One item is missing in your list,
That
is the enforcement. The need to assure adequate enforcement is applied, and so just that's a longer-term issue we discussed during the Fish Committee meeting. Should have appeared.
Okay. Sorry about that. So rule number 46 was there were a number of these individual proposals for various places on all of the streams that said adopt no fishing from a floating device on select streams. Recall that the advisory group recommendation was just the Upper Ho. But this rule had a number of different places and times, and one of the more active comments were on this one, 661 comments, about split equally between pro and con. Most of the folks on the pro side are saying, hey, these rivers are already experiencing significant angling pressure. This is a way to create some refuges, allow some fish a place where they can get away from this constant onslaught of boat traffic and lures and baits being put in front of there. So the Ho River is the one place where we've had some trouble meeting our escapement goals in recent years. Folks suggested that might be a real key place for doing this. Other folks suggested that we bring some of these rules down into the Grays Harbor Basin, Humptulip, Satsapoinuchi. And finally, a thought that this would promote more orderly fisheries. On the con side, folks were opposed except for Dickey Salmon and the Snohomish. Those are all in the Queets drainage, except Dickey, sorry. Salmon and Snohomish are in the Queets drainage. Cons, it would cut off large pieces of water from fishing because of unsafe bank conditions. And finally, that folks with disabilities or injuries might have difficulty climbing out of a boat and getting onto the shore to fish, or that they wouldn't be able to walk into those areas and might discriminate against folks with those disabilities. Selective gear rules. Most folks commented in favor of this, the thought that bait does kill more fish than artificial lures. There's also, it's not captured here, but that sometimes they can be more effective with bait. Working on the wild steelhead part of this was to ban wild steelhead fishing completely. That these rivers contain the last viable populations of wild steelhead. And again, single barbless hooks. On the opposed side, a feeling that this proposal is to benefit one specific user group rather than all of the user groups as a whole. Prohibit the harvest of wild steelhead. Again, 634 comments received on this one. Most folks, by far, are in favor of this proposal. The comments about applying it statewide, these are the only places where we're allowing wild steelhead. So essentially, if you decide to go with wild steelhead release on the Olympic Peninsula, you have essentially said at this point statewide we would be entirely wild steelhead release. And most folks just indicating that the time is right for us to go this direction. Last time I think the commission visited on this, it was much more split. It surprised even me to see the level of 90-10 here. For on the opposition side, don't overregulate the rivers. Some folks felt, hey, there are still harvestable fish in these systems. Obviously, the tribal folks are going to continue to fish. And so why would we limit ourselves on those? In terms of a wild steelhead harvest tag, not nearly as many comments, and I think that's because most folks are saying we're not going to be harvesting wild steelhead, so we don't need a tag anymore. On the pro side, folks are saying all steelhead anglers should have to purchase a punch card. And if wild steelhead harvest is allowed, then yes. And that this would help limit the number of wild fish poached. Enforcement compliance. On the opposed side, again, let's just stop harvesting wild steelhead. We don't need a tag. Others felt it was counterproductive and reduces opportunity. Again, no kill on wild steelhead and limits opportunities to the wealthy only. I don't know if that's an idea that the cost of the tag would be too significant for the average person, perhaps. Questions about North Coast steelhead? Maybe remind folks kind of the genre of what those proposals entail.
Let me give you an opportunity to share the staff's view of the trends, status and trends of wild steelhead populations and West End rivers, so everyone hears it.
One of the desires that we're hearing from folks are that our goals for these systems are very low, and that traditionally the systems supported a much larger run of steelhead than what our current levels are. Those thoughts are supported by data of old canning records, old catch data. If you, from my perspective, from what I've looked at the escapement levels and the run size levels, if you go back to the time when we really started managing these fisheries more intensely, which coincides with the onset of the Bolt decision about 1974, That's when we had to really understand what our harvestable levels are and the sharing between the state and tribes, and not just steelhead, but salmon also. Our level of management increased significantly. From that time, my view is that these runs have been fairly stable in most of our three systems up there. The Ho, in the last few years, there are some troubling trends in terms of not meeting escapement. One can pick high points in that data since 1974 and look at where we are now in 2015 versus those highest run sizes and draw a negative trend. I don't think that that's a honest evaluation of where we've been since 1974, but some folks have done that. In terms of can we achieve the levels or similar levels to where we were in the 1940s, 1950s, I think we have to be realistic about the fact that while much of this habitat is protected in the Olympic National Park, some of the lower portions of those rivers have had significant degradation of habitat. Where we have looked at steelhead escapement goals most intensely was probably down in Region 5, some of the work by Dan Rodding and company down there. And everywhere we have looked, the productivity of our rivers has declined significantly since even the early 80s. And those rivers are no longer supporting nearly the number of spawners that they did historically. And through his analysis always all suggests that those spawning goals don't need to go up, that they need to come down in order to adequately manage those systems. So could we take a precautionary approach and manage to a higher escapement level and see if there's a response by the populations? If we had the ability to manage those solely by ourselves, yes. We could certainly advocate for that with our co-managers, understanding that we have one escapement goal that is court adjudicated, we have one escapement goal that's agreed upon between the state and tribes, and we have one that we have separate spawning goals. The tribes have one and we have a different one, and there is no agreement. So are we going to be able to effectively argue for a higher spawning goal without doing a significant amount of science and analysis of the data that's at hand? That's going to be a tough row to hoe if we don't have our ducks in a row. And so that's one of the items that we've identified for the longer term issues for North Coast Steelhead, is we need to understand from our own perspective where we think what's an appropriate spawning goal level for those systems, so that if we think it's higher based on our analysis, that we can effectively argue with the co-managers to get an adopted higher level. That's going to be difficult. So, yes.
Difficult to get arrive at the appropriate number or to get our co-managers to agree.
Both.
Two questions.
Both. I mean, setting escapement goals is can be challenging. There's maybe Annette might help me out here, but you can especially if you do an MSY analysis, sometimes you can draw 100 different curves through that data that all fit the data and tell you 100 different places on where you might settle for a spawning goal. So
it just appears that, you know, at one point these streams all had much higher escapement levels. And even with improved, I mean, and that was an era when we didn't have the habitat that we do now, didn't have a lot of other issues on these streams, and they held and they had the capacity to spawn many, many more fish than they are doing now.
I would argue that the habitat was better back then than it is now on the North Coast, where many of these streams, the upper portions, are all in the Olympic National Park, and there's been very, very little habitat degradation in those areas. But the lower portions are all in either private or DNR, and some of those areas have been cut extremely hard over the last 30 or 40 years.
Okay.
So hopefully some of the timber, fish, and wildlife changes will help us here for the long term, but it's going to take a while for those protections that were put in place, what, 20 years ago now probably, mm-hmm. just to really start affecting those streams.
Right. So. All right. Good.
So I believe that that was all we had on North Coast. And now I think Chris is going to come up and finish up. What's that?
One last proposal to deal with then is Lower Columbia warm water proposal. You can remember back to the last rule cycle we had in Eastern Washington where we initiated this proposal in the Upper Columbia and Snake River, requesting that we remove all bag limits on walleye, bass, and channel catfish. That was implemented in the last rule cycle. We didn't do it from the Oregon state line on the Columbia River to the mouth because we didn't have concurrence at that time with the state of Oregon, which is one of the issues we have in an MOU with them. Since passing that in the Upper Columbia, we visited with Oregon extensively on how to get concurrent rules that would allow us to remove the bag limits. Oregon's commission, I believe, in the last 6 months, probably even less than the last 6 months, has approved that. And our hopes would be that, based on the input we got from the public and coming to the commission, that we could be consistent with where Oregon went. The comments that we received from the public, pro invasive species, this proposal makes sense. Much has been invested in salmonid recovery in the Columbia, so removing these fish would increase survival. Cons, the science does not support. Can't blame salmon and steelhead run sizes on warm water fish. Warm water fish are important to the economy, and trophy size walleye are being diminished due to this rule. And with that, I'd take questions.
Chris, have you had any way of determining the amount of pressure that's been applied to these species in the upper river since this rule was applied? You know, that was the concern is, oh, gosh, we're not going to have a limit now. These guys are going to just come in and just pillage, you know, our populations.
So I can address that in a couple ways. One, no, we don't have a formal creel
right.
that looks at warm water anglers. Did I see more anglers in the Upper Columbia out angling? No. It's the same guys in really nice sparkly boats that I see every time I go there. And when we think about the bag limits that we had there in the past, we had a 10-fish bag on smallmouth, no more than one over 14 inches. That's essentially a no-limit rule, except the inference is that we were going to manage them.
Right.
So we removed the department's inference, change our policy about that, to we're not going to manage for warm water fish. Commensurate to the smallmouth limit then was the walleye limit, which was 10 fish, 5 over 18, 5 under. Again, I go back to a 10-fish bag on walleye is essentially no limit. So this really, I don't think, changes things from the perspective of harvest or pressure as much as it changes our policy and the message that we send about salmon and steelhead recovery in the Columbia Basin. And that we're not going to actively manage warm water fish to the detriment of the recovery of those native salmonids.
Right. And, you know, within the culture of walleye anglers, there's always been an unwritten rule that fish over a certain size are always returned to the water. And that hasn't changed. If you're new to the sport and aren't familiar with the ethics, then sure, you might violate that rule. But as you mature as an angler, walleye fishermen always return large spawners to the river.
And our intent is to work with the angling public to make warm water anglers an active participant in salmon and steelhead recovery. And you can do that by harvesting fish at appropriate sizes and amounts. And while there can be some risk that the warm water community thinks we're devaluing their fisheries, in reality, what we're saying to them is that we're not going to actively manage for warm water fisheries in the main stem or tributaries,
But we have thousands of surface acres of reservoirs across the state where we are actively managing for warm water fish. And I guess I give you an example today is Summit Lake, where we didn't intentionally stock them there, but we do actively manage for them there. And it's appropriate from the perspective that they're not impacting ESA-listed fishes in that body of water, and we can maximize the recreational opportunity around that fishery.
So as we wrap up, just wanted to remind folks that today is focused on a public hearing. Between now and December 11, 12, staff will be reviewing all the public input that's been received to date, and we'll come before you the December 11, 12 meeting with recommendations based on the input we've received for your consideration at that meeting.
Might mention that that meeting is going to be in Port Townsend.
Yes, and thank you.
Also ask that we have a big enough room.
Great, thank you very much. And so with that, if no other questions, we can finish with the rest of public testimony.
Yeah, we have a number of folks, and again, I'll call you up two at a time. Thanks, guys. Here to the 3 minutes, please. Sean Gallagher and Mike Zavadlo. Take it away, Sean.
Resident of Washington State. I fished, angled for steelhead for over 50 years in the state of Washington and throughout the Pacific Northwest. So I have a pretty good picture of the fishery right now. I was also mentored by people my grandparents' age. Three things that brought me here. There's an undisputed decline in the wild steelhead populations. We've increased the pressure on the Olympic Peninsula North Coast docks due mostly to the ESA listing closing all the Puget Sound River, so I see a lot more pressure over there now than I have in the last 10 years. And something we haven't discussed is fishing gear and fishing methods are more effective now than at any time in history. Across the board, fly fishing doesn't matter. So what I'm seeing now are people fishing with fly rods out of boats that are doing things that we would never dream of 20 years ago as far as catching fish. They're just as effective as the people that are fishing plugs or bobbers and floats. So keeping that in mind, when I looked at these proposals from the advisory group, I had a couple things in mind. I wanted first to look at, is this good for wild steelhead, number one? Number two, is it good for the angling experience? And I think that the proposals are, but I don't think they go far enough. Rule 47, no-brainer, I agree, catch and release for wild steelhead. Rule 46, adopting the no fishing from a boat on selective streams. I think that is, when I looked at it, it's about 6 miles of one section of the Ho River. Very insignificant. And I think if we really want to make a difference, we need to expand that. I would pick from the park boundary all the way down to Highway 101 on the Ho, and I'd look at two other watersheds also. Quileute Watershed, Bogashiel River from the park boundary down to the Steelhead Hatchery, and on the Queets drainage, on the Clearwater from the Snohapish River down to Gross Bridge. That's about total of 26 miles of river. So it's really a compromise when you're looking at over 100 miles of rivers that are open for fishing out of boats. Okay. So as far as the bait ban, I don't think that it does enough to protect early timed wild steelhead. That's used to make up the bulk of the run and is also where probably the most fish, the part of the run that's mostly in peril right now is the wild stock early time steelhead. So I think that we should have no bait allowed during the winter steelhead season.
All right.
Thank you.
Bill Meyer, please, and Mike.
First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen and hear our comments of these root proposals. My name is Mike Zavadlo, owner and operator of Mike Z's Guide Service out of Forks, Washington. I've spent the last 19 years building a reputable guide service and raising a family in a small rural community. I have a Bachelor of Science in Biology. I'm a member of the North Coast Advisory Group and also Northwest Olympic Peninsula Sportsman's Coalition and a member of the Olympic Peninsula Guides Association. The OPGA is a compromise of 28 full-time fishing guides who have a vested interest in our long-term success on the Olympic Peninsula fisheries. These fisheries are a key economic factor to the small, isolated community of Forks. Sport fishing is one of the largest economic contributors in our community. Anglers come across the globe to fish our wild steelhead. I was on the forefront of wild steel conservation by volunteering, releasing wild steelhead, and taking DNA and scale samples for the past 7 years. This was no small effort, taking time out of my client's day and taking these priceless samples for the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife. My volunteer efforts in this program is just a small example of our commitment to the success of wild steelhead populations. The OPGA voluntarily went to a one wild fish limit on Fall Chinook in 2014. The preseason forecast indicated low return of adults, and we have recommended for years to reduce the limits of these fish, as well as seen a decline in fish populations over the past decade. The following year, the state agreed with our population concerns and adopted the one wild limit on Fall Chinook. The OPGA is a conservation-minded, as we want to ensure that there is wild steelhead for generations to come. We agree with the steps that are needed to take to protect these wild steelhead and want to ensure the rural proposals to help the steelhead and not just eliminate user groups. It is imperative that the absence of the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife law enforcement in our area be addressed immediately. We strongly feel that the whole process is utterly useless without proper enforcement. Our understanding is that we currently do not have any wildlife officers. We consider creating and fulfilling these positions to be top priority in the Olympic Peninsula. We respectfully request your immediate attention in this urgent matter for the welfare of our area's fish and wildlife. We are willing to work together with WDFW and its enforcement in a way possible. Myself and other guides of the OPGA have important and valuable knowledge about the Olympic Peninsula rivers, fisheries, and we hope you all consider our testimony today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Ryan Bullock, please. And Bill.
Hello, Chair and Commission. Thank you for taking this time to listen to my testimony. My name is Bill Meyer. I operate a full-time professional sport fishing guide service on the Olympic Peninsula since 1996. I'm the president of the Olympic Peninsula Guides Association, the vice president of the North Olympic Peninsula Sport Fishing Coalition, the vice president of the Pacific Coast Salmon Coalition, and I've volunteered many hours to help our fisheries. I am committed to the long-term success of our fish populations. The studies often quoted regarding the use of bait versus non-bait are outdated and fail to demonstrate current steelhead fishing practices. As Jay mentioned with logging, fishing has evolved over time, just like logging and other practices. The internet and information available has sped up the learning curve for new steelhead anglers. Most all steelhead bait fishermen currently practice catch and release, which is evident in our creel surveys. When fishing with bait, I see very few fish mortally hooked each year, and that's from a lot of experience. We want relevant data that a bait ban will help our fish before we take on this impact. Bait is simply just an additional technique used to pursue steelhead. It is not the most effective method to catch steelhead in all water conditions. Different river flows generally predict the most effective technique. On high water flow days, bait will generally outperform most techniques. Once the river drops and clears, float fishing and indicator fishing can dominate the percentage of catch, and then fishing, and then persons fishing with bait will take a back seat. The elimination of bait would only switch catch rates to different techniques in lower flow conditions. We have selective fishing areas now. I encourage the Commission to thoroughly investigate the catch rates versus the areas of non-selective areas. If there is truly non-selective, to see if we are truly catching more fish per angler in non-selective areas. So to clarify that, if you're missing, we have selective areas, non-selective areas. What's the catch rate per angler in those different areas? There's a representation of bait versus non-bait already. I have witnessed similar catch rates in both selective and non-selective areas. I fished the entire Olympic Peninsula, every river system from the top to the bottom. Instead of relying on outdated studies, this is current relevant data to our rivers, and it must be looked at. A bait ban rule proposal impacts the largest group of traditional steelhead fishermen in the state. Now, I know we saw a slide before that showed 90% of people were in favor of a bait ban. Now, the number on that that survey was 462, and I can assure you that that is not 90% of the steelhead population of fishermen. We also represent the largest portion of license sales, and there are and we're probably not very well represented here today. I believe a large number of steelhead fishermen are not even aware of these proposals. Thank you.
Larry Ford and Ryan.
My name is Ryan Bullock. I'm a Forks resident, a fishing guide, a member of the Olympic Peninsula Guides Association. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental science with a specialization in sustainable fisheries. I'm here as a member of the Guides Association to express our concern with the proposed limit of fishing from a floating device. To be clear, our Guides Association sees a conservation need on the Ho River, and we are not opposed to change. We are, however, opposed to making rules simply to make more rules. When it comes to fishing out of a floating device on the Upper Ho, we strongly urge the Commission to gather more data before implementing this strategy. Before a rule such as this can be put in place, an extensive creel survey must be done strictly from Morgan's upstream so that a baseline for how many users are currently fishing that area and how many fish they are catching can be established. Without several years of data providing a baseline, there will be no way of measuring whether banning fishing from a floating device reduces encounters or by how much. It is very possible that by making anglers park their boats and fish from shore, they will be spending significantly more time in each run, potentially increasing encounters beyond the level that we're currently at. We would also like to caution the Commission about making rules that would exclude handicapped anglers, the elderly, those that cannot fish safely outside of a boat, and the majority of angling techniques that are used in this area. Because this rule adversely affects a large number of businesses and a significant percentage of the angling public, we demand that the Commission does their due diligence in collecting the necessary data to ensure that such a rule would in fact have a measurable positive effect on the Upper Ho River steelhead. Finally, we also encourage the Commission to continue to think of creative ideas to lessen steelhead encounters. We would like to point out that if creating sanctuary is the goal, banning fishing from a floating or from an inflatable device would be a better option, as it gives sanctuary to the fish in low water when they are most vulnerable to being caught, and would have a more encompassing and fair effect on all user groups. While looking back at our group's extensive experience on the Olympic Peninsula, the single factor that has made the biggest difference in the catch rates is the use of inflatable boats. The popular use of these boats is the single biggest contributor to increased catch rates. They have given the inexperienced and out-of-state guides and sport anglers an incredible advantage over years past. Our opinion is a ban on inflatable boats from December 1st to April 30th would affect all user groups and provide a real limiting factor for all fishermen on catch rates. We know this is not a popular idea, and to some fishermen this might be the first time a rule proposal affects the way they fish. However, if this idea is given honest consideration, it could be a step in the right direction. I think a lot of us, too, would like to invite a lot of you guys. If you want to experience our fishery, I mean, a lot of us would be happy to open our boats to you so you can actually see how we're fishing out there and see how some of these rule proposals may or may not, you know, be as they're proposed.
Thank you, Ryan. Aaron O'Leary and Larry.
Well, I'm Larry Ford. I'm owner-operator of Blue Heron Lodge and Guide Service in Forks, where I am a full-time resident. I'm also a member of the Olympic Peninsula Guides Association and the Northwest Olympic Peninsula Sportsman School. We as a group, being the OPGA, support mandatory release of native steelhead on the rivers of Olympic Peninsula to help put more steelhead on the spawning grounds. We are, however, concerned that our co-managers may increase their harvest in the event that spore anglers go catch and release. It is clearly the intent of this rule change and the vast majority of those who support it to increase the number of spawning steelhead. If sport fishermen forego their harvest of native steelhead, will the co-managers lay claim to all or part of the unharvested fish? If they do, will Fish and Wildlife be willing to defend our right to use our portion of the run however we choose? If it becomes necessary, is the state of Washington willing to go to court to protect this right? Fish and Wildlife managers have given us conflicting answers to these questions. We feel it is the duty of the Commission to discuss these issues with the Department and, if necessary, with the state's attorney to be sure that the desired goals will be accomplished. In short, if mandatory release of native steelhead does not reduce overall harvest, we do not support it. If it does, we do. We are counting on this Commission to take the time to find the answers to these questions for us. This is a pivotal moment. We have the opportunity to see rules enacted that will protect native steelhead and our livelihoods. We do think that the Hoh River is in a different state of concern. The Hoh River has not met its escapement in 7 of the last 15 years, and this concerns us greatly if we want to continue to have angling opportunities. Because of this, we feel that there is no longer any foregone opportunity for the co-managers to claim. So we overwhelmingly support no wild steel retention on the Hoh River. We have evolved as fishermen over the past years, and the vast majority of steelhead anglers no longer have the desire to retain wild steelhead. As you can clearly see in recent catch data, we have a greater desire to see steelhead thrive, and if we release them, we know they have a much better chance of doing just that, thrive. Forks is a small community, and our fishing is extremely important to our local economy. All of us as a group are looking at this long term. We want to see these fish protected for the future generations of anglers. We thank you for your time.
Thank you, Larry. Robert Kretzler, please. Aaron?
Hello, Chair and members of the Commission. Thank you for having us here and letting us testify to these important regulation proposals. My name is Aaron O'Leary. I own and operate Angler's Obsession, a fly fishing guide service in Forks, Washington. I was born and raised in Washington and have been guiding here for 10 years. I'm a member of the Northwest Olympic Peninsula Sport Fishing Coalition and also a member of the Olympic Peninsula Guides Association. The regulation proposals for the North Coast steelhead they have before you today, if passed, will have significant impacts on your largest recreational angler base that buys licenses. Some of the recommendations are very restrictive and will severely impact a number of user groups, including private anglers, sport fishing guides, and tackle and bait supply businesses that specialize in specific angling methods. Retail stores, restaurants, and lodging businesses will also be impacted in our community. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is severely underfunded and facing a massive budget deficit in the 2017 to 2019 biennium. Passing regulations that restrict access and fishing methods will severely impact the support that is needed for the Department of Fish and Wildlife to pass revenue packages in the coming years. The recreational angler and the guide industry cannot continue to pay more and get less. It's time to find a way that we all have fair, equitable, and increasing opportunities so that WDFW has the support they need to be sustainable into the future. If we embark on severely limiting specific user groups and impacting tackle and bait businesses, we will create controversy and support will become severely fragmented. There is simply not enough scientific research on either side of the majority of these proposals to clearly say that they will benefit wild steelhead. Specific studies need to be conducted to find out what is best for the fish. If we bring these proposals into law and they have little to no impact on the fish, there will be many user groups that are impacted severely by these rule changes. There needs to be scientific data to back these rule proposals before they go into law. Recreational anglers on the Puget Sound and the inland rivers and streams up and down the coast have been severely hit with reductions in opportunities and the flat-out closures of some of the most popular fishing areas in western Washington. These proposals will be another big hit. We do not have enough quality and successful fishing opportunities in the region to support the recreational angler base. Finally, we believe all recreational anglers should be allowed to fish equally and fairly. Please take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. And Paul Sparks, please. And Robert.
I'd like to thank the chair and the commission members for taking time to listen to our testimonies today. My name is Robert Kratzer, owner of Angler's Guide Service, resident of Forks, Washington. I've been guiding Washington for 31 years, 27 of those years in Forks. I'm a member of the Olympic Peninsula Guide Association. I'm also the president of the Northwest Olympic Peninsula Sport Fishing Coalition, which has over 100 members consisting of guides, sports fishermen, businesses, and concerned citizens. I also sit on the Steelhead Cutthroat Policy Advisory Group, and I was also on the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group. You've heard our testimony today from the Guides Association, and you're going to hear plenty of others from all kinds of concerned citizens regarding fishing rules on the Olympic Peninsula. As you can see, we're all very passionate about steelhead, and we want to make sure that we have steelhead to fish for years to come. I'd like to bring a couple things to your attention. The Guides Association, the Sport Fishing Coalition, and a large part of Forks residents have been instrumental in several conservation moves over the last couple seasons. We were the groups that voluntarily cut ourselves back to one false Chinook a day when the limit was two, which resulted in almost no Chinooks retained for the 2014 season. The Guide Association, the Sport Fish Coalition, the Quileute Tribe, the Pacific Coast Salmon Coalition, and the City of Forks all dug deep into our own pockets to help fund the raising of 100,000 silver salmon smolts when the state's budget could no longer pay for them, and we are working on doing it again right now this year. This season, when the silver salmon forecast was so extremely low, we worked with our wildlife biologist and lowered our limits to one salmon a day to make sure there were plenty of salmon to make to the spawning gravel. As you can see, we have a vested interest in the future of our steelhead and salmon fisheries. We've had plenty of time to talk over these proposals, and we've talked about ways that we could help ensure the sustainability of steelhead in the future. And one you've heard of already today, and that's we discussed the use of inflatable boats from December 1st through April 30th. This would give steelhead some refuge in low water conditions and does not affect any one technique. This is the one largest contributing factor that I've seen in my last 10 to 15 years that has changed our fishery. Fishing out of inflatable devices has changed our fishery and has allowed anglers to access water that would either be unfished or only fished in certain water conditions. This one change could make a dramatic decrease in the amount of fish that would be encountered with and allow for plenty of refuge for our steelhead. We're asking you time to take a look at these rules and make sure they fit steelhead management for sustainable fisheries, that you look what fits all user groups, what fits for the private sportsmen, what fits for the guides who makes their income taking the public fishing, and also asking that you think about the fragile community of Forks and the implications that could come from radical changes in our steelhead fishery. We also feel it's important that you take the time to look at the guides, as we are probably the largest user group over there, and that we do have and a massive amount of wealth and knowledge there. And we ask that you would take the time to talk to us, think about what we have to say, and work with us when we have all kinds of ideas on how we can reduce these things that may not be quite so radical. We understand that as things are changing, that we're going to have to change with them. We're only asking that we change in a way that fits all who fish for steelhead or are impacted by steelhead fishing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Robert. Jonathan Stump, please. And Paul?
Hi, I'm Paul Sparks, longtime fisherman, longtime fisheries advocate. I'm speaking for myself today. I support in full all of the rules change proposals. I do have some concerns. My primary concern is something that occurred to me in this room in 2007 or 8. I was sitting in the back of the room, and a colleague shared with me three graphs. The graphs charted using the agency's data steelhead population sizes and steelhead escapement numbers for years 2008 through 2007 or 8, whatever it was then. What was really clear is that there was a steady decline, a large and measurable decline. I took those graphs home, taped them to a larger sheet of paper, projected out these trends, and the populations went below the escapement sometime in late 2000s, early 2030s. The other day, I got a chance to see updated graphs for the same numbers and with more accurate, with the longer projection. And my crude projections are fairly accurate. We're losing these fish. I think the proposals are a good idea. I strongly support them. But you need to be aware that they will only arrest the decline. They will not reverse it. To reverse the decline, we need larger escapements. And we also need to consider the way habitat functions. I disagree with your gentleman who sat here in this chair a half hour or so ago. The habitat, as he stated, in the peninsula up in the park is excellent. It is less good, but it's still good in the middle reaches of those streams. But when he speaks to the habitat, the effectiveness of habitat, he eliminates a very large part of the way habitat functions. He did not speak to nutrient enhancement. If there were full-bodied runs of coho in those streams and more steelhead, we would have considerable nutrient enhancement, and the fishery would start to reverse its decline. So without an aggressive nutrient program in those watersheds, either utilizing hatchery fish, and I realize that's an expensive, ugly proposition to address the agency now because of your contracts, or alternatively, increasing the escapement for coho, I don't think you're going to turn this around. If your intention is to go to the tribes with data that shows that this experiment worked, you have to increase the nutrient. The second thing are more minor details. Once again, I've listened to the data about hooks. Some years ago, I did an informal study comparing trebles, single barbed hooks, and circle hooks. I discontinued the use of the treble hooks because it was killing 70 or 80% of the fish in my study. Thank you for the chance to testify. Paul.
Chase Gunnell, please, and Jonathan.
Hi, good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jonathan Stumpf, and I'm here on behalf of the Wild Steelhead Coalition. I also serve on the Steelhead Cutthroat Policy Advisory Group and the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group. First off, I'd like to thank the Department for all the hard work and planning that has gone into this process, from recommending a bold set of sport fishing rule changes to the formation of the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group to sort through these proposals. Your work and dedication is very much appreciated. However, it is time to see this investment of our work into this magnificent resource through to the end. As we know, and so do the thousands of anglers that come to the region each year, the OP is home to some of the last best fishing for wild winter steelhead in our state. But unfortunately, the resource is finite and the angling pressure is only growing exponentially. For instance, last year, 130% of the wild steelhead escapement on the Solduck was caught and released. 70% of the Ho River's wild steelhead escapement was caught and released. And the Ho River has failed to make escapements 7 out of the last 14 years. And this is department data. These catch numbers are not sustainable over runs that are already in decline. Something needs to be done, and we believe this opportunity laid out to improve the sport fishing regulations is one step forward to managing the resource as a sustainable fishery, allowing us to fish through recovery and not face closure or an ESA listing, like we've seen in other parts of the state, and continue to bring economic vitality to the Forks community for many years to come. As a member of the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group, it was an honor to work with the various stakeholders. We were all there because we love wild steelhead and have a passion for fishing for them. At times it was challenging, but a decision was made, and the package of proposals is a great start, one that the Wild Steelhead Coalition fully endorses. And I will say that there was considerable compromise made from all members to achieve this package, and as such, it does not represent a consensus of opinion from the members, but a meeting place somewhere in the middle. The harsh reality is that the status quo is failing steelheaders and the magnificent fish we pursue. Rebuilding these runs will take more than good angling regulations, but they are an important part of the recovery puzzle, and we as anglers can start making these small changes now. As challenging as it may be, we must look inward in order to minimize our collective negative impact on these struggling stocks. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Richard Sims, please, and Chase.
Good morning. My name is Chase Gunnell. I'm an angler, a conservationist, and I've lived and fished in Washington as long as I've been alive. Like my colleague Jonathan here, I sit on the board of the Wild Steelhead Coalition, and I grew up fishing on the Skykomish and the Snohomish River. I grew up between those two rivers, and I have a lot of sympathy for the anglers that feel that these regulations proposed today go too far or limit opportunity. But I've seen firsthand the alternative, and that alternative is no opportunity. I worry that if something is not done today, we will not have the opportunity for future generations to fish these rivers in the winter or in the spring. I'm here supporting the package of proposals from the North Coast Guide, the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group. I think they're sensible, common sense steps in the right direction. As you've heard, these are collaborative proposals. They're not the consensus from either end of the spectrum, but they're there in the middle. And I think that's what we need. It's effort in the right direction. It's an effort to preserve our angling opportunity and our fish for future generations. And I've seen firsthand what can happen if those efforts aren't taken. I don't want the Olympic Peninsula to go the same way as my home Skykomish River in the winter and spring. And I hope you'll support these proposals and advance them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chase. Robert Foster, please. And Rich.
Thank you, Commissioners, for your time. My name is Rich Sims. I'm also a member of the Steelhead Cutthroat Advisory Committee, as well as a member of the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group. I'm also the founder of the Wild Steelhead Coalition, and I'm also a lifelong angler of Washington, fishing all sorts of different methods over time in my life and my angling. First off, I'd like to thank WDFW for taking steps forward by accepting and putting forward some progressive proposals for North Coast to help provide some relief for wild steelhead. I'd also like to thank Steve Thiesveld for his work leading and facilitating the North Coast Advisory Group. It was a very hard job. The North Coast rivers of the Olympic Peninsula is the last major place in the state of Washington to go angle for wild steelhead. Let's really reflect on that for a minute. The rivers of the North Coast are being converged upon by the largest amount of anglers and professional guides at any time in history, with better access to information, with more effective and efficient equipment and angling methods than ever before. The pie is shrinking quickly. There is really no limit to catch and release, so we as anglers are handling more of the fish, as well as we are still harvesting them. This compounded by the tribal commercial gillnet fishery that seems to threaten to take our in common with portion if we choose to release them to the spawning grounds. In essence, the fish don't seem to have a chance, with some regression trends that potentially we'll see collapse in the next decade. I support the current proposals of wild steelhead release, barbless hooks at certain times, bait closures at certain times, and some small sections for use of floating devices of transportation that will provide some relief for the fish and help continue our opportunity to keep fishing. Please refer also, when you have a chance, the graphic that I produced that gives you a visual representation and illustration was actually being proposed regarding the floating devices proposals, as there seems to be a perception that all fishing from a boat is being taken away. In my membership with the North Coast Advisory Group, I made many compromises to help get us to a recommendation package that could be brought forth to the commission. But I knew that would be the spirit of my participation to find some sort of a balance and some common ground. The future of angling for wild winter steelhead is at risk. Please remember there is no opportunity in a closed river. I have been through it all and had enough time to witness where it was and where it is at now. I grew up in Paulsbow. I began fishing the Forks area in the late 60s, camping in the back of my uncle's 57 carryall, and have continued to fish the rivers there through my whole life. Although I do not live there, I still consider these rivers in many ways my home waters. Please make proactive choices for wild steelhead and implement proposals put forth for us and future generations.
Thank you, Rich. Paul Martini, please. And Robert.
Hi, my name is Robert Foster. I'm a resident of Washington State. I'm a part-time guide, angler, and I work for WFW on the Methow River for Charles Snow and Charles Frady. I come today to support the package that's been suggested by the North Coast Steelhead Advisor Group. While I think there's things there that people had to give on, in general, it's a start. And for the most part, I think it's universally understood that we need to, at this point, cease killing all wild steelhead. It's the only place in the world that you can still do it. There's no other locations where wild steelheads swim where you can kill them. And that's just, I think, the biggest underlying problem that we have out there. Going forward, I think these other outlined rule changes, fishing from a boat on the upper Ho, would provide an opportunity to curate data to understand whether or not that's beneficial. It's, you know, at this point, more opinion, and I'm for that rule change, but making appropriate changes to these rules will do more good than harm. And one thing that's been bothering me and that I'd like to touch on is the lack of enforcement, and it was brought up previously, and I know that the department is lacking in funds, and where I worked on the Methow, we were, you know, supported by mitigation costs by the Upper Columbia River dams, but it was, as an angler and as an individual working in the river, very encouraging to see Cal Tresser and Jason Day very active in the community and very, you know, visible, and that encouraged better angling practices, it decreased poaching, and I think that's one thing that could really benefit the North Coast rivers immensely. In addition to facilitating better enforcement, I think that if the department could find a way to increase funds through a stamp to have better research that's collected. Those upper river Columbia tributaries have a lot of research that's been collected, and a lot of it's due to the fact that they are there for mitigation reasons. But I think that all these concerns that are being raised would be better validated if that research was actually available. And it's really difficult, I know, to accommodate that. So other places in the world that have incredible fisheries like the peninsula have much higher rates for out-of-state fishermen, out-of-state guides. As much as some of the views vary amongst guides and fishermen in this room, I think that local guides should be prioritized as they show the most concern and do the most work to conserve their fishery. And I think that going forward, that's an issue that should be addressed, is the number of out-of-state guides. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Roger Bialus, please. And Paul.
Thank you to the commission here. It's a pleasure to come up and speak, and I want to change the tone a little bit. I know there are a number of concerns that everyone has shared, and the concerns are very, very real. But I'm excited by the opportunities that we have here this morning and for our fisheries, because we're putting a great deal of thought into this. I want to give you my full support of the advisory group package. I think that what we're doing there, while there are a number of compromises, as mentioned, are very important. You know, the barbless hook thing, I've been fishing with barbless hooks for close to 30 years, and everybody here in this room who stuck a hook in their finger or their earlobe knows that a barbless hook is a lot less traumatic, and that certainly applies to the fish as well. Releasing all wild steelhead and rainbow trout, the recent science on the interaction between resident rainbow and steelhead trout I think is interesting, and I fully support the release of all the wild fish. Again, going back to my years as a sport, as one of the guys in the boat with all the guides who are here, certainly, you know, I haven't kept a wild fish in decades. I enjoy the opportunity to release them and have them fight another day. The proposal on prohibiting fishing from a floating device on the upper Ho gives us an opportunity, and as the board chair had mentioned earlier, with the opportunity to look at this in terms of a sunset rule, let's give it a try. Let's see what happens there. It's a relatively short piece of river. It's an experiment, and there are certainly valid reasons to be concerned about it, but let's try something new. And I've got notes here real quickly as I listen to others talk. In regards to the ADA, give them an exemption. Let people with disabilities continue to fish from a boat. That's a small population, and I think everyone would be agreeable to that. So that's a way around that, or at least a way to mitigate that issue. The other thing that we've talked about here a little bit this morning is what happens with our co-managers. The opportunity here with most of these proposals allows us to lead by example. So let's give these a try and see what happens. We don't know the exact science. We're never going to know the exact science. But let's move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Mike Tinder, please, and Roger.
Hi, I'm Roger Bylis, and I grew up in Port Angeles. And I'm in a family that harvested fish regularly and ate it many days a week my whole life. And I continue to fish. I live in the Puget Sound area now, and I harvest very few fish and zero wild fish these days, which is unfortunate, but I'm happy to do it. And that's the state of our fishery, and it's what we need to do. And I applaud the efforts here to take forward steps to look at the trends and what's happening with the wild fish populations and to use the data we have available, the best data we have, and to make common sense proactive steps to, you know, to rescue this fishery that's in decline. You know, we'd all like to have better data, but the fact of the matter is, you know, the clock is ticking, the runs are diminishing, and we have examples of data here and examples of these types of rules put into effect on other fisheries that we can learn from. It's common sense. My only worry is that it may not be enough, but it's a big step in the right direction, and I'm really encouraged by these rule proposals and hope that we put them through. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Chris Tinder, please.
Good morning. My name is Mike Tinder. I'm a private citizen from Tacoma. I don't represent anyone but myself. I'm an angler that greatly enjoys fishing on the Olympic Peninsula as well as anywhere else I can find time to go in the state. However, as many of us here would say, after having spent time there in different seasons and different weather conditions, there's something very compelling about being able to be on the Olympic Peninsula, be on the rivers, see the life cycles, and quite frankly, the wild steelhead there anchor that for me. I fully support the recommendations of the North Coast Steelhead Coalition. I believe them to be a modest proposal, and I know I don't have as much in the game as guides on the coast or business owners on the coast, but I recognize that we are all fighting over the scraps, and therefore I am comfortable saying, that it is a modest proposal to help bring these fish, maybe not back from the brink, but to forestall the brink so that these disparate user groups can all come together, meaning sport fishermen, fly, gear, bait, and hopefully the Native Americans. We can all get together in time, but forestall that for, you know, I've heard people talk about further time for study, what have you. Well, let's buy the time for that. Let's push that back. I have a boat. I enjoy floating the upper Ho. I am happy to forego that if it brings, gives the fish more time. I'm happy to make that give that up. As we all know, that below Morgan's, there's a lot of river, and there's simply, it looks like I-5 on some Saturdays and Sundays out there. So that was poorly said, but I thank you for your time.
Well said.
Thank a lot you. Of ums in there, huh?
Thank you, Mike. Chris, I imagine you'll say if it was right or wrong, right? And I'm calling up Chris Taylor, please.
Good morning. Thank you for your opportunity to speak. My name is Chris Tinder, and I represent myself.
I support the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group package of proposals and the collaborative efforts of all the various stakeholders and this effort to protect and restore our Olympic Peninsula wild steelhead. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chris. And calling up Nick Chambers, please, and Chris.
Yeah, I'm Chris Taylor. I am here representing myself as an angler, first and foremost. I fish several times a year on the Olympic Peninsula. I hire guides, both fly fishing, gear fishing. And I'm also the president of the Kitsap Olympic Peninsula's chapter of TU, who we have 450 people, most of whom enjoy fishing on the Olympic Peninsula. I'm also part of the North Coast Advisory Group as well. And I just want to thank you all very much for, overall, it seems like there's a new culture in the department of listening, and I know a lot of us appreciate that. The advisory group was, I thought, really well put together, very well balanced of lots of different user groups, and though it was really tough at times to kind of condense everything, there was a lot of compromising going on, and we finally came up with these proposals. I support them all, but I got to say, it's just the first step. I want to concentrate on one, the catch and release fishery for wild steelhead. I really believe that, you know, this is a no-brainer. Increased fishing pressure is out of control. The wild populations are going down. They just can't sustain this. And I also want to say that it's going to have a bigger picture benefit, I believe. I think this is something, this wild steelhead catch and release, is something that we can all rally around, all the user groups, and it will bring some of the groups together rather than drawing lines and pointing fingers. This is something we can really get behind. And I think that'll benefit future management of this fishery. And lastly, I think a wild steelhead fishery, I'm looking down the road here at a booming, self-sustaining wild fishery, and that is going to bring business back. That's going to bring a different type of business. And so I think that's overlooked a lot. But there are examples around the country and in Canada that show that the communities benefit greatly from a sustainable wild fishery. The angling opportunity is great, and it's sustainable. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Al Schmoder, please. And Nick.
First, I want to thank the commissioners for the opportunity to comment. My name is Nick Chambers. I'm a third-generation Pacific Northwest fisherman and hunter. My background is in, I've been a steelhead guide in the Northwest in Alaska, and also worked in fisheries and in the fishing industry for a number of years. So the Olympic Peninsula represents one of the remaining best wild steelhead fisheries in the lower 48. This fishery draws a large number of anglers every year to the community of Forks, and it's a huge economic benefit to that community. I worked at a lodge in Alaska where, because of a declining king population, we instituted a catch-and-release policy on ourselves. And even though we did that, we had no problem filling up our lodge for the season. We had a small turnover of anglers, but those spots were immediately booked back up by people that wanted to come up and catch and release for these fish. And since then, that fishery has been closed to fishing for both commercial and sport, and that lodge has had to reduce the number of boats on that river and has a difficult time filling those boats during the kingfish season. So increasing numbers of anglers on the OP are also contributing to the decline of the wild steelhead population. And some will argue that the sport fishermen should not regulate ourselves unless the tribal nets are removed, but it's because of these nets that we must change the status quo. Nearly every fish that makes it past these nets is being caught in the sport fishery, and this combination of tribal nets and sport fishing is just too much for this fishery to handle, and escapement goals are regularly not being met. And these rivers are currently managed for a maximum sustainable harvest. And a great example of this is the Skagit River, which was managed this way. And as you know, it's now ESA listed and closed. And so we have the opportunity to change what we're doing right now and fish these rivers in perpetuity. And as a steelhead angler and a researcher, I can attest to the effectiveness of bait. However, as a former guide, I can attest to the many other effective ways that are out there to catch steelhead. Bait does not limit the opportunity of anglers, but it will lessen encounter rates and minimize the harm on juvenile steelhead, kelts, and rainbow trout. Resident rainbow trout commonly mate with steelhead and have been shown to significantly contribute to winter steelhead populations. It is important that we protect the various life stages and diverse life history of steelhead, because this diversity, coupled with a robust population, is what will help buffer these fish from the effects of a changing climate. The Deschutes in Oregon and the Skeena River in BC are two great examples of sustainable catch and release fisheries where you're not allowed to fish from a boat. These fisheries support thriving guide businesses and help support the local communities, and they also are regulated to provide a small sanctuary for the steelhead. This is not about how you fish, it's about what is needed right now to help sustain these fisheries in the long term. We've been loving the OP to death, and we are at a point now where we can reverse the trend and fish through recovery on these systems. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Following up, Rob Lisonis, please, and Al.
Chairman and the commission members, my name is Al Schmouder. I'm the vice president of the Chamber's Clover Watershed Council in Pierce County. I'm speaking on my own behalf today because our council didn't have time to get all information to answer as a whole. Thank goodness I don't have the issues that your steelhead fishermen have. But today I wanted to talk about recommendation number 10, and this is to open two small creeks in Pierce County to fishing. Right now they're closed. Flat Creek is proposed to be a catch and keep for cutthroat, and Leech Creek is proposed to be a catch and release. The reason is that there is an abundance of cuts of coastal cutthroat. I oppose this recommendation, and it's a terrible recommendation for our watershed for four reasons. Number one, of course, there's no science for this, as we heard in some of the other testimony. There's no fish counts. There's no evidence that there's even any fish to catch in these two small streams. In fact, James Losey commented, and we don't know much about these fish. He commented and made a publication. He says, where these fish go to spawn or where they come from, we really don't know. Okay. In fact, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, even on their website, thinks that these two creeks are in the Nisqually watershed. And they're not. They're in the Chambers Creek watershed. So, number two, these two urban streams suffer the ill effects of urban stormwater runoff. Flood Creek drains our Tacoma Mall, which has many acres of asphalt parking. Leech Creek drains a former Superfund site. It was a Tacoma landfill. And in 2009 and 10, Department of Ecology studied Leech Creek and reported that there is contamination of mercury and copper in Leech Creek. In fact, they recommended that Leech Creek be put on the 303D list of the state of Washington's water quality assessment for exceeding aquatic life criteria for mercury and copper. These fish in these two creeks have a terrible time surviving, and now we want to put more pressure on them and then kill some of them. So now the third thing, is maybe the worst thing, is this a social issue. Opening these two streams, which has never been opened in the past, to fishing is going to cause us a lot of social issues. In our 300,000-person watershed, maybe the most urban in the state, we have our fair share of boneheads and illegal fishermen. As soon as these fishermen figure out that creek is open, what are they going to do? They're going to grab a pole, grab their salmon eggs and their worms, and go fish. And then what are we going to do? We're going to call Fish and Wildlife and say, damn it, you got these guys fishing up here. And they're going to say, you know, that's a big problem. We don't have any money for enforcement. We wish we did. Why don't you go do something about it? So now the city of Lake of University Place owns Kobayashi Park. It's the only place you can fish on Leech Creek that's open. So we're going to have a social issue. Last year, we had fishermen throwing rocks at the chum salmon. And we know they're going to do dumb things. So anyway, our sports fishermen in the area, fly fishers, say, we want to catch them in the ocean. Don't screw up our spawning grounds, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Jeff Westerlin, please. Rob?
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Rob Masanis. I'm the vice president for Western Conservation of Trout Unlimited. I'm also a Washington State resident and an avid steelhead angler. I want to register my support and the support of TU and Wild Steelheaders United for the recommendations coming out of the advisory group. I will say on some of those recommendations, we don't think they go far enough. We'd like to see the bait ban extended earlier in the season. I think recovering the early component of the wild steelhead population is incredibly important, and it's not getting enough attention.
We have 4,500 members in Washington State, TU, and 3,700 supporters of Wild Steelheaders United. We've submitted detailed written comments. I'm not going to go into that here today. Today I'm going to focus my comments on the larger forces at play that should be front and center in your decision-making. First, the OP's wild steelhead population is in long-term decline. I disagree with the department's representation of that. Happy to talk to you about the science and the data behind that. We also have a warming Northwest climate that's only going to increase the challenges for wild steelhead going forward. And if we don't take actions now to increase escapement, improve diversity, and reduce angler encounters, we risk losing the wild steelhead fishery, period. Second, listing of OP wild steelhead under the Endangered Species Act is a growing risk if current trends continue, and none of us in the room make that call. Right? The economic harm to local communities, if that happens, will dwarf anything related to rule changes. That can be avoided if we act now to better manage the fishery. Third, enormous public and private investment is going into habitat. This past year, the legislature appropriated $11 million to do habitat restoration on the OP. We're only going to get a return on that investment if we're allowing wild fish to use it. We have to manage the fishery in concert with the habitat if we're going to get wild fish recovery on the OP. Fourth, TU just completed a large survey of over 600 steelhead anglers, and only 22% of which fish with flies. In rivers where wild steelhead numbers are low or their status is not known, a substantial majority favor more restrictive regulations and catch and release than more liberal regulations that allow freedom of gear type and harvest. That same survey shows that 77% of the anglers think that overcrowding is a problem on steelhead rivers, and they want to see something done about it. So with increasing interest, a growing population, Puget Sound River's closed, more pressure on the OP, the writing is on the wall. It's actually there now, right? And then finally, there are those who believe that the biggest problem on the OP is the commercial tribal gillnet fishery. And to those folks, whether they're right or wrong, I would just say that we should lead by example, as a gentleman before me said. If we're to work effectively with the tribes to improve their steelhead fisheries, we must be willing to regulate ourselves to rebuild wild steelhead populations, and this is a great start. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Jason Small, please. And Jeff?
Hi, I'm Jeff Westerlin. I'm a long-term fisherman, recently been infected with the steelhead bug, and been fishing on the Olympic Peninsula for the last 10 years or so. I'm here representing just myself as a fisherman. I want to thank you guys for creating the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group, of which I support all of their recommendations. That said, there's two things that I wanted to say. One is, as a scientist, I like numbers, and I would really like to have some way of assessing whether the no boat thing on the upper Ho actually works, or how well it works. I'm sure that it will reduce interactions with the fish, but it would be nice to know actual numbers on that. And the second thing is the catch and release. I was concerned that might lead to greater, if we as fishermen decline to retain fish, it might increase retention of fishing by the tribes, and I don't think that's the case anymore. So that was a concern with mine, and I think that has I've come to grips with that anyway. So I hope that's not the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. And calling up Shane Anderson, please, and Jason.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jason Small. I am the Puget Sound River Steward Coordinator for the Native Fish Society, but I'm here as a citizen as well. I support the rules that the group, the package of rules that they put. I have no issue with method. I don't care how anybody fishes. I don't have any high-minded ideal about what's right and wrong. If it's legal, there's no problem with a method on a sustainable run, on a population that can support it. That's where my issue is. I don't begrudge anybody any method of fishing. I fish all different kinds of ways myself. The con on the bait proposal saying it, the proposal benefits one user group. I can appreciate how people could perceive that. I really can. But I think that there's a lot more of us that are supporting these regulations that don't care about bait or gear or whatever. It's just about the population that it's happening over. I've got one of those rubber bumpy boats that any idiot can row down the river. I'm one of those idiots, you know, and if that goes away, then, you know, so be it. It's about the fish. The analogy that I've actually made in front of this very panel before is that there's not enough cupcakes for the class. It's that simple. We have to reduce angler impact. We have to figure out a way to do it. I think these proposals are fairly conservative. It's on a very small portion. It's not coast-wide. And I can appreciate the guys that took the time to drive out here from Forks and how they're concerned about that. And I appreciate them coming to the table and how hard they've worked to come up with what they wanted as well. And I really do appreciate seeing that. I appreciate how difficult the position you guys are in. You have a lot of different people that you're trying to satisfy. These rules are a step in the right direction. I hope that you guys take that into consideration. And one of the biggest things is, please fight desperately for the fish that we're going to be releasing if over the whole foregone opportunity thing, because if they don't make it to the gravel, it's all for nothing. And I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Shouldn't have mentioned cupcakes. So. Erica Stock, please. And Shane?
Good morning, Commission. Thank you for considering these rule changes that I strongly support. My name is Shane Anderson. I'm representing myself, and I'm also a board member with the Pacific Rivers Council. This is my fourth testimony regarding Olympic Peninsula steelhead populations in the past 3 years. I'm really hoping that some of these rules can finally get implemented. I truly believe that this is our last shot to make proactive management measures to do our part to curb the decline and possible collapse and listing of the wild steelhead populations on the Olympic Peninsula. Since rule changes only come around every 3 years and declines on rivers like the Ho are going down quick, there's no way that us citizens can address the overharvest by tribal gill netters unless we clean up our house first and show that sportsmen are willing to make changes and sacrifices for the fish. Catching and releasing 130% of the sole duck's escapement last year and killing wild steelhead in a gene bank is not how we're going to get gill nets out of the rivers. We need to show that we're willing to come and step up to the plate as well before we ask them to change. Furthermore, we're entering an age where ocean conditions are undoubtedly creating major challenges for the fish. We have no idea what's going on in the future, and with the escapement levels goals low and not reaching those low escapement levels, we don't know what the future holds. We combine that with extreme weather patterns like this atmospheric river we're experiencing right now outside, increased commercial pressures, and declining productivity, which is a fact on the Olympic Peninsula streams. We could most certainly be setting up for the perfect storm of limiting factors for wild steelhead of the Olympic Peninsula. We as anglers can only control our own impacts at the end of the day. So I think it's time we start to put the sport back in sportsmen. Thank you.
Thank you, Shane. Bradley Bubbitt, please, and Erica.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. Sorry, thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak today. My name is Erica Stock, and I live in Clackamas County, Oregon. I am a lifelong fisheries advocate, and I'm also here on behalf of myself and my daughter, who's 6 years old, and she's also a joint Vancouver, Washington resident. So she has a vested interest in this as well. And I'm here to express support for the revised regulations proposed by the North Coast Advisory Group. But before I start, I just want to thank the members of the commission here for the leadership and work in establishing wild gene banks. I think that's a really phenomenal thing that you guys have been doing here. Very progressive and novel approach to wild fish management. And I think I speak for some of my friends here that we're looking forward to working with you all to further aligning sport fishing regulations with this concept on these particular rivers so that that ends up being a success. The Washington coast is a spectacular place for many families like mine. It's a place that my daughter first held a rod after learning to walk shortly thereafter. And while she spent a vast majority of the day crawling on her hands and knees inspecting what she calls water bugs and playing with the occasional amphibian, watching her mom fish. This is a place where I hope she will catch her first steelhead, and she likely will, since there are so few places you can still do that in this country. Beyond that, I want her to have the opportunity to return here with her children, and hopefully someday, if I have grandchildren, if I'm lucky enough, to catch their first fish and have those memories. I mention this story because I want to focus my testimony on our responsibility to our children and our grandchildren and the opportunity we have today by approving, eventually, these very responsible and reasonable regulations to hopefully begin, at the very least, to halt wild steelhead declines that we ourselves have inherited and continue to perpetuate. Once teeming with wild steelhead, the great runs of the OP have been reduced to a mere fraction of their historic abundance, due in large part to overfishing. We've got a lot of listed populations under the ESA, and 7 of the last 14 years we've failed to meet escapement goals on the Ho. While many of the mounting threats that continue to put pressure on these fish are outside of our control, warming temperatures, low snowpack, more frequent droughts, and we won't even talk about the ocean conditions that continue to be a wild card, sport fishing regulations are an area we can immediately improve by deciding how, when, and where we fish for wild steelhead. Practicing catch and release, returning wild steelhead to their rivers, using less harmful fishing practices and gear are all proactive ways to reduce mortality and our impact on wild fish. Adopting these regulations proposed by the Advisory Council is the responsible thing to do, and I urge the Commission to do so at the December meeting so that we can continue to recover and protect wild steelhead, not just for all of us in this room that all love wild steelhead, but also for generations to come, our children and grandchildren. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. James Starr, please. And Bradley.
My name is Bradley Bobbitt. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment. I'm an avid angler. That's my interest here. Mostly I'm also a volunteer with the Native Fish Society. I just wanted to voice my support for the proposed rules. That's mostly it, yeah. I'm for any of these rules that will support wild steelhead abundance. I think long term, that's going to be the big investment that'll help us have a good fishery. So that's my view. Thank you.
Thanks, Bradley. Brian Townley, please. And James.
Thank you very much. My name is James Starr. I'm from Port Angeles. I'm an avid fisherman, and I'm here on behalf of myself and my 8-year-old son. As Erica mentioned, I think that this is important issue for this generation, for generations to come. My 8-year-old son really enjoys fishing with me, and I would love to see him catch his first steelhead on the peninsula. And I've been up there for 15 years, hiking just about every stream and river, snorkeling all those rivers and streams on the peninsula. And I'd like to address a comment that was made earlier that habitat conditions outside the park are not favorable. I don't see that at all. I see lots of good habitat and fish not using that habitat. So I think that if we want to increase the escapement of steelhead in the peninsula, these proposed rule changes are a great start. And I think that also limiting the fishing from a floating device is a great first step. I think that that doesn't go quite far enough. I think that we could increase the length of river. There's lots of other rivers that limit fishing from floating device, the Dean River, the Skeena, the Deschutes River. Those are all successful fisheries and support successful guide operations. So, yep, I fully support all the proposed rule changes. Thank you.
Thanks, James. John McMillan, please. Brian.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Townley, avid steelhead fisherman for about 30 years. And I kind of see a pattern forming here. Most of these proposals are basically removing certain user groups and benefiting another user group, mostly fly fishermen. And first and foremost, I'd like you guys to consider that if we give up the release of all wild steelhead, it's already been acknowledged that the tribes are going to take those fish. So let that be a fair warning. Also, as someone else noted, a notable guide back here, Bill, there's no scientific evidence that bait has any more mortality than gear, fly gear. There's nothing up to date on any statistical information on that. And then prohibiting fishing from a floating device on the Ho River. I'm against this, partially, as you saw on the screen there earlier, that this is going to lead to other rivers having floating devices being prohibited, the Satsup, the Wainuchi, and other rivers. It's just going to get added to the list. Because once one of these laws gets enacted, it never gets reversed. The other thing that I want to make note of is my backyard river has had all these rules and regulations put in place, and they have done nothing to save wild fish, the Snoqualmie. We've gone to no bait, no barb. We've gotten rid of summer run plants. And now currently we're getting ready to get rid of our winter run hatchery fish, which is going to put more pressure on all these rivers these guys guide on. That's another thing that the commission needs to take a look at, because as soon as they close down all the Puget Sound area, the Olympic Peninsula is going to be a combat zone. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Dave Steinbaugh, please, and John.
Thank you, commissioners, for allowing me to comment today. My name is John McMillan, and I am the science director for Trout Unlimited's Wild Steelhead Initiative. For most of the past 20 years, I've lived on the Olympic Peninsula, including 10 years in Forks, and I've spent thousands of hours and snorkeled thousands of miles conducting research and monitoring of the steelhead populations in the Ho and the Quileute Rivers. They are my adopted home rivers. I am kind of an orphan, as many anglers are. I was born and raised in Southwest Washington on a steelhead river, and I am an angler too. It is my love and passion for steelheading that made me want to become a scientist. And I want to talk about 3 points here today. First and foremost, I was part of the North Coast Advisory Group. I think it was a compromise. I do support the rule changes, but I would also echo that I think the bait ban needs to be lengthened to include the early part of the winter steelhead season, because there is clear and concise data from not only the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, but from other groups like Wild Steelhead Coalition, that the early part of the wild steelhead run has been severely depleted. In the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, up to 70% of the steelhead were caught in January and February. The winter steelhead season we now see on the Olympic Peninsula largely begins in early February. The second point is, I understand that some of these rules are contentious, and change is never easy. And it's unfortunate that we've reached the state of steelhead that we have in Washington, where we need to implement these types of regulations. But the reality is, I do disagree with the department's stance. I am a scientist. I've published over a dozen peer-reviewed articles and journals. I've written books. I've authored a number of magazine articles and book chapters on steelhead. When you look at the data on the OP, those runs are clearly in long-term decline from 1980 forward, and I believe I've shared that with some of you. And this is a concern, because now we're starting to see places like the Ho and the Queets not meet escapement. We need to do something, and one of the ways that we can compensate for all this increasing love that we're giving to the Olympic Peninsula is to better regulate ourselves. And I know that there have been arguments that people talk about the Bob Hooten work that came out of the mid-90s and late 80s as not being representative for bait. I have a lot of other data from the 2000s, from all over the Thompson River, from the Trinity River, and what we see is that bait is 3 to 8 times more effective than fly. It's 2 to 5 times more effective than gear. It has much higher mortality rates on kelts. We need more repeat spawners on the OP. And perhaps most importantly is that bait has 20 to 40% mortality on rainbow trout and juvenile steelhead. In the Trinity River, in 1 year, anglers caught 11,000 juvenile steelhead smolts in 1 year. That's a tremendous amount of fish. Lastly, I think there's a comparison here. When I go back to history, I'm not only an angler, I'm a duck hunter. In 2001, we banned the use of motorized decoys for ducks. That was upheld in 2012. The reason? It's really effective. We can either have a really long season where we're less effective, or a really short season where we're most effective. Thank you for making these rule changes. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, John. You remember RoboDuck then?
I do. I couldn't afford him.
We saw RoboDuck here one day. calling up Thomas Perot, please, and Dave.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for giving us this opportunity. I am in full support of the proposed rule changes. The Olympic Peninsula, at least for winter steelhead, is being loved to death by too many anglers and too many guides that have become extremely effective and efficient at catching fish over and over again. What is happening is not sustainable. It is already a combat zone on the Olympic Peninsula. What I would like to emphasize the most is all rules are good. Perhaps the most important rule is no fishing from boats, especially if you were to extend it to more watersheds. It's a no-brainer. It has worked in many other places to great effect. And it's one of the best rules for a number of reasons. It affects everybody equally. It does not pit one user group against the other. This is not fly fishermen against gear fishermen. The majority of the fly fishing guides that are working the peninsula are gear fishermen. They're bobber fishing out of boats, the same as the guys that are fishing floats and jigs, same as the guys that are fishing baits. So it does not pit one user group against the other. It affects everybody equally. It's going to piss off everybody equally, and that's not a bad thing.
That's our goal.
Yeah, well, that's good. And the proposal now for the HOE is on such a short stretch of river that it's not going to really affect any of the guides. The next boat ramp that any of them put in is only a few miles upstream from Morgan's Crossing, so it's not going to have any effect on the guides' livelihood. No fishing from boats is the easiest to enforce. You don't have to look at hooks. You don't have to check boats for bait. You can see if they're fishing out of boats or not. It gives the bank angler a place where they can have some peace, where they don't have to constantly look over their shoulder and wondering where the next boat is coming from. It will improve the quality of the experience, which is what is starting to decline on the peninsula. I own the fly fishing shop in Port Angeles. I've had it since 1998. 10 years before that, I lived out in Forks where I fished and guided out there. I have a lot of gear fishing customers and bait fishing customers and have had for a lot of years. They are just as fed up with the behavior of certain guides and the number of boats that are on the river. This is not a fly fishing versus gear fishing proposal. It's not all about catching fish. The most efficient ways. You heard some of the guys say, if the bait isn't working the best, then we go to this that is working the best. If that isn't working the best, we go to this that's working the best. Whatever we can do to maximize the number of hookups every day, all season long. So then one way to take care of that is no fishing from boats. They're all fishing out of boats. So that's a really important proposal. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Call up Keith Denton, please. Thomas?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the room this last hour or so and listening to some of the commentary on science or lack of science, I'm reminded of the famous line from the late Senator Patrick Daniel Moynihan on the floor of the U.S. Senate, who said, "Sir, you are entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts." In considering these regulations, and in particular the gear restrictions, there are facts. There's a mountain of evidence. There's no lack of data. We have easily a half century worth of very solid information on catch and release. Some of you folks have probably already looked at that. If not, you're staff biologists certainly have, and they are aware of it. So let's put to rest that myth right now. You have the information. I've submitted written testimony, so I'm not going to reiterate all of that. I'd just like to make the point that from my personal point of view, probably the most important role that this new catch and release policy may play is to give your agency, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, a more effective voice in discussions with your co-managers, the tribes, in whose nets are, of course, intercepting diminishing runs of wild Olympic steelhead. We, as anglers, I believe, must sacrifice today for the sake of tomorrow. We know we're ignoring the scientific evidence and failure to be proactive in the face of erosion of the wild steelhead resource leads us. the empty boat ramps and empty rivers throughout Puget Sound are a melancholy testimony. Some of those rivers may be lost forever. On the coast, there is still hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Richard Burge, please. And Keith.
Thank you for providing me this opportunity to testify today. My name is Keith Denton. I live in Squim, Washington. I've fished out on the Olympic Peninsula for the last 15 years. As a professional fishery scientist who specializes in enumerating adult salmon and steelhead populations, I think what Steve has talked about and others have talked about with the escapement goals and enumerating fish and where they should be is fascinating, and I can respect the ambiguity of the data. But I think what is very clear is that there is a lot more pressure than there used to be 15 years ago, regardless of what we want to say about the population levels. And I applaud the department for getting this North Coast Advisory Committee together. It's not as though it was a single user group or put this together. You guys obviously realized that there was an issue and went and got public input, and then we've got to this stage. And while nobody thinks that all the rules are great and there's lots of issues, which we're hearing today, I think this is the broadest coalition of support you are going to get from a wide array of anglers that you're going to get behind to do something. And I think that regardless of where people stand in this room or the people that didn't show up, obviously this is an iconic fish. It's the state fish. People care a lot about this regardless of what they think, and we need to do something. I think everybody would agree that we have to do something, and this is the most broad-based set of rules you're going to get. So I wholeheartedly support all of them, and I agree that I think a lot of them don't go too far. I am a big fish conservationist, and this is really just about limiting fisher encounters with fish. I mean, all of these rules come down to that, and I think anything we can do, there's going to continue to be more fishermen out there. We have to reduce the encounters. So I wholeheartedly support all these rule changes. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. And Richard Burge? Yeah, he's right there. And then Al Senufil. Richard.
Good morning, Chair Smith, members of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. My name is Richard Birch, and I'm a retired fisheries biologist. I'm also a member of the department's two steelhead advisory groups, including the one that established the rules for you to review. I urge you to pass all the rules and recommendations that came from that advisory group and to consider additional changes through the next few years that can help reverse the downward trends in coastal steelhead stocks. I provided you with two sets of information, which I guess you'll get a little bit later. One is a package of graphs of the runs and showing you the condition of them, and the other one is a paper on catch and release impacts. The first are graphs that show the long-term declines of the coastal steelhead stocks. What many sport fishers do not understand is that wild steelhead are in serious trouble, and you'll see that in those graphs. These stocks are projected to reach fishery depletion and not make the required spawners starting in about 17 years. But long before that, probably in the next 8 to 10 years, the stocks will fall to levels that are too low to maintain present fishing seasons. Puget Sound coal managers, when faced with this problem, allowed harvest below spawner escapements so they could have harvest and fisheries and increase hatchery plants. These measures backfired and contributed to the stock crashes. It would be scientifically and economically wise to make changes today to assure that this does not become an impossible task in the future. The second paper that I gave you is a review of the research that describes angler impacts on fish they catch and handle. We have known for many years that the use of barbed hooks and bait produce about twice the mortality of other types of gear. But what we did not understand at that time, that there were additional impacts from catch and release fishing. Scientists studying Atlantic salmon and rainbow trout have found these fish will produce high levels of cortisol from long fights and handling stress. Fish with high cortisol levels have been shown in laboratory studies to produce fry that are smaller and have very high mortalities. Clearly, our longer handling of steelhead to remove barbs and bait and to take pictures can be reducing the survival of their progeny. And we see that in the productivity curves, which I could send you if you were interested. When wild steelhead reach their holding and spawning areas, they are much easier to catch. Knowledgeable guides and anglers often fish these holding areas in March and April and catch many more fish than normal. Wise management would include closing all upriver holding areas to boat fishing by March 1 to reduce the high encounter rates and stress impacts to the spawners that are now in these areas. We should also be taking steps to reduce the total number of interceptions on the coast by limiting the guide fleet, having limited openings on the Skagit River when it is time, and keeping the catch of all parties to their legal allocations.
Thank you, Richard.
Sorry, go ahead.
I would like to receive, I'm going to take you up on your offer. I'd like to receive those productivity curves if possible. If you'd send them to the department, to Tammy, she can forward those to myself and anybody else on the commission that would like to see them. Thank you.
Call up Wes Hoppler, please. And Al?
My name is Al Senio. I'm president of the Steelhead Trout Club of Washington. We're in our 87th year this year. Also an active member of the Menhow Valley Fly Fishers. Fly fishing is my choice 99% of the time. I'm also a member of the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group, and I want to compliment Steve Thiesfeld for a gathering of all of the elements of our discussions and trying to bring them to areas where there was at least some consensus agreement. Speaking for myself, I'm a longtime supporter of release of wild fish. I'd like to see it statewide. This is really the only area in the state where wild fish are allowed and to be taken one a year. And barbless hooks. I've supported barbless hooks for years and years statewide for not just steelhead, but sea run cutthroat as well. One of the regulation proposals, number 46, fishing from the restrictions on fishing from a floating device, I think are particularly troublesome. It's the important element, I think, of the Fish and Wildlife Department and this commission to always look at opportunity. And when you begin to restrict opportunity, in this case, drift fishing, traditional drift fishing from a boat, fishing with floats, with jigs and various lures, those who like to pull plugs. For me, I like to fly fish for steelhead with an indicator and nymphs. And to eliminate that opportunity from a boat, to enhance an opportunity for one specific user group, I think is a mistake. Miranda, I know that you're concerned about the amount of pressure on the rivers. I know you have a home on the Sawduck, a getaway place on the Sawduck. But in this case, on the boat fishing on the upper section of the hoe and restricting it, you really don't change the pressure. They just simply move down the river. So you have the same amount of pressure, the same amount of fish encounters, just in a different location on the river. There's no data that tells me that would be any significant change in the escapement of wild fish by implementing this regulation. No way to monitor it. So the Steelhead Trout Club would be against that. Personally, I am for barbless hooks and release of old wild fish. You have bait restrictions already in place above 101. You have selective gear regulations already in place above 101. So please consider those that are in place now and how they're being implemented. I'm disappointed that Dr. Unsworth is not here today. And I would ask the big problem that we have on the coast is the lack of harvest management agreements with the tribes. So I would ask that, and that will make a meaningful difference on the gillnets on the lower river.
Thank you.
the director's at a family funeral. His father-in-law passed away. He's in Spokane and having to take care of his mother-in-law, too. So I'm sure our thoughts are with the director. John, is it Farrar? Okay, thank you, John.
Tammy?
Wes?
Did the handouts get passed out that I turned in?
You. We'll get them later.
Okay. Just some context. I'm Wes Hoppler, past SPAG member, current North Coast advisory member, lots of other affiliations here representing myself. I want to remind you that this was an interim proposal, and part of the reason it needs to be an interim proposal is there is no strategy for the North Coast to get a different outcome in those watersheds in terms of how we actually co-manage with our co-managers. And so I'm a little disappointed that once again we're pulling on sport fishing rule levers, mostly because we can, not because we have a strategy that we've actually worked up. And so this is a little backwards in my mind, that we don't have a strategy to get where we need to be. And sport fishing, while it's significant, is not the key impact at the moment on the coast, so these changes will be modest at best in outcomes. In terms of truth, the Creel survey data that the department does have does not particularly represent the notion that pressure is wildly higher than it was in the past. And in fact, past efforts to manage the stocks conservatively have in fact led to additional pressures, conflicts with particularly the Ho and the Queets tribes over allocation issues, and they have stepped up their harvest over the past. I hope you will be able to stay open to new approaches. I was the 10% in the North Coast group that was arguing for some harvest level. I think this is ultimately going to get resolved in court, and I think not having having a zero harvest outlook is very problematic for resolving that. However, I did not object to the proposal. I abstained. The argument was people wanted the tools to have clean hands to try and shame, frankly, the tribes into exercising their treaty rights differently. Fool's errand, I personally believe, since they're already screaming about non-existent rights and how we get them back. Just say no to the no fishing from floating devices on the upper Ho. This was by far the most divisive thing the group talked about. The proposal that the group talked about mostly was focused on whether it should be a closure between the 15th of March and the 15th of April, the 1st of March and the 15th of April. How in the end exactly we leaped right past the entire winter season to the entire year is really troubling to me. No one's saying that there's an issue with encounters outside mostly the winter staging and spawning time. There are hatchery fish that are routinely caught there in the summer. There are strays in the Ho August and September, and it should be open to fishing from a boat then. Against the selective fisheries for the barbless, want to point out that the pished quinault and hump tulips will all need a little cleanup if you move forward. The quinault will have to have the harvest opportunity taken away. You'll have to clean that up, and I recommend that the hump tulips, 2-week expansion of the hump tulip season be enacted.
Marissa? And they're here. John?
My name is John Farrar. Don't step outside to get a smoke because you're going to get wet, particularly if you can't find your way back in here.
One could say you shouldn't go out for a smoke anyhow. As an ex-smoker.
Oh, I went across the street. I thought I'd come down here to the South Sound where Chinook salmon are extinct, according to the department, and visit with you about pink salmon, which are abundant. Why? The state of Washington has one hatchery devoted to pink salmon. That's at the south end of Hood Canal. None other. But we have a tremendous, and I suppose the department hasn't trumpeted this fact because they didn't have anything to do with it. We've got a lot of pink salmon coming back, thank God. That's a lot of fertilizer. And why? No hatcheries. And that's why I want to visit with this commission about your policy of selective fishery, which permits hatcheries, which are one of those four H's. I'm not going to tell you which one. Other thing I wanted to visit with you about is removal of the adipose fin. Now, contemporary science says it's a vestige. I'm telling you, it's a critical appendage of our fish, our state fish, which we are cutting off simply to distinguish between wild fish and hatchery fish to allow this selective fishery, which underlies the whole thought of hatcheries. Science down in Oregon on the Hood River has determined that it is a critical feature. It's not a vestige. Nice to be with you.
Thank you, John. Ben Paul? Thank you. Marilis, 2 days in a row.
Good morning. Here we are again. For the record, my name is Marlisa Williams-Dugan. I am a Willapa Bay advisor, but today I'm here to testify on behalf of myself on, thankfully, something other than salmon management. As many of you may remember, I am a long-term resident of the North Nima River. My family has been there since about 1884. And about 14 years ago, there was a 10-year moratorium placed on the retention of sea-run coastal cutthroat trout in Willapa Bay tributaries and most areas in the state because some of these areas were in serious trouble. At that time, my understanding is that the WDFW had insufficient data to determine if adequate numbers existed to allow retention of these fish, and as a result, all rivers were listed for catch and release only because no data was available to determine, to differentiate which rivers had healthy self-sustaining runs and which rivers were in trouble. I have discussed a North Nima River rule change request with Ron Warren in 2012 and again in 2013, and I have addressed my request again for a rule change with Steve in 2014 and again in 2015. I have fished this river, every year for sea-run cutthroat trout and feel the North Nima River was closed initially without cause. I have to be the luckiest fisherman and property owner in the room, no doubt, because we have an amazing salmon run. We have managed to hold on to our steelhead run there. We have a small but decent self-sustaining steelhead run, which I support catch and release. This river is unique. It's fairly short. The primary spawning habitat for trout in the Nima is located behind the closed gates of the Hancock timber holdings, similar with North River and a lot of the Nacelle. This area is protected from human population and pollution, and the trout have thrived here. A healthy population of juveniles and 13 to 17 inch trout can be found there today. We consistently have had a good population there. I feel that North River probably deserves this same designation in consideration as I move forward with my request. Ron Warren and Steve Theisfield right now both seem open to my request for a rule change on the river. I apologize for pushing and pursuing the issue at what must seem like the last minute, because I think that this issue has been placed in the do not recommend bin, and it was suggested to me that I better get here today if it remained important to me. But I'm afraid the more pressing issue of salmon conservation in 2014 and 2015, you know, took front seat. Restoring recreational fishing opportunities in areas where self-sustaining trout exist is important. And I attended the Coastal Cutthroat Trout Symposium in Vancouver in 2015. Biologist Kitty Griswold is currently gathering data coastwide, California, Oregon, and Washington, on the amazing adaptability of this coastal cutthroat trout. This species can be migratory or residential at different times in their life. I don't know if many of you know most about this amazing trout, but they can decide to be, they can stay in the river for the first few years of their life. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruth. And last but not least, you're bringing us home, Lucas Young.
All right. My name is Ben Paul. Thanks for letting me have a chance here today. I'm representing myself, and I don't have all the facts and all the numbers, so please excuse my disorganized, maybe nonsensical and anecdotal testimony here today. But I'd like to say that I'm in support of the suite of rules proposed for the Olympic Peninsula, number 46 through 48. And big reason for that and a big premise for everything I'm about to say really stems from just the incredible effectiveness today of fishermen out there. And I'm not sure you guys may be aware of that, and you know that I've heard 70% of the host steelhead get caught or whatnot, but and I'm not speaking about myself here. I'm a fly fisherman. If I catch one fish a day, I'm thrilled. Usually I don't catch any. But I know a guide who last season, he personally and his clients caught over 400 steelhead that season. And he's a good guide. I don't know if he's the best guide on the Olympic Peninsula. There's a lot of really good fishermen in the room today, and I mean a lot of this as a compliment to them. But, you know, figure 10 of his buddies, 4,000 steelhead maybe in a season. I mean, a lot of fish are getting caught, which leads me to make my points, which is that's potentially, and I'm not saying anyone here in the room or anyone's killing wild steelhead, but there's potential for a lot of dead steelhead there, even if out-of-state anglers are only killing one apiece. Second, any fear that a gear restriction is going to seriously limit someone's effectiveness really sort of rings pretty hollow with me when you're talking about that kind of numbers. These guys, people out there, fish are going to get caught with jigs, with barbless hooks, with plugs. As to the effect, as to the lethality of bait, well, I was kind of on the fence until I heard John McMillan speak about that, so now I'm sort of the opinion that bait is more lethal. But and then there's the third element of the fishing out of a boat, and I think in light of all this effectiveness, and you know, I mean, are these rules going to save wild steelhead? No, probably not by themselves. It is a step forward. Some people say they're not going far enough. Other issues need to be addressed. How the wild fish part of it affects negotiations with the natives, I can't speak to, but I will say this. Having a sanctuary for those steelhead above Morgan's Crossing can't hurt them. The reason Olympic National Park was created was to protect elk from hunting pressure. This is what we do. We create refuges for animals. And quite frankly, my own self-interest desires a place where I can go and be free of the onslaught of boats. I consider 5 to 10 boats ahead of me, I consider that a gill net in front of me. And I feel very not too confident fishing when so many other people are shooting guns and I'm trying to shoot a slingshot going for steelhead. So I'd like a refuge from that. Thank you.
Thank you. And Lucas, you have the last word.
Thank you. Good morning, Commission. Chair, thank you for having me here today, for allowing the input of comments. My name is Lucas Young. My background is in fisheries biology, but I currently work in the fly industry. The sad reality is that we are, without fish, there can be no fishermen, and we are all here as fishermen today, in some form or fashion. My message to you is simple, though, that ultimately what's best for the fish is best for the fishery in the long run. To that regard, I would urge you, in all matters in the face of uncertainty, to employ the precautionary principle when decision-making and considering proposals. To that end, I think that these fish, our state fish,
The enigmatic and iconic steelhead should be afforded protection wherever possible. To the tune of Wild Harvest, I think that that should be eliminated statewide. I would argue that there is no such thing as foregone opportunity with the fish that is released. Rather, there is opportunity forwarded. Forwarded to the next fisherman, to the next season, and to the next generation. I think that the boat restriction should be extended to include other watersheds and larger areas of rivers. I think that it affords these fish more refuge and that they are subject to less pressure. And I think that that is important to the long-term health of these runs. I think that I would like to encourage the state to consider restricting guides to state residents only. I think that would help to eliminate some of the pressure on the rivers. And in a worst-case scenario, I would even be willing to hang up my own gear for a moratorium, if that's what it took, to recover these fish and ensure that we had fisheries available in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. And thank you all. That was a very... Radley? Yep.
I guess after listening to all the testimony, there's one group that I do want to compliment, and that's this bunch of young gentlemen sitting in the front of the room here, the guides. You guys really resonated with me. I'm also in the resource business. And when we get to these points, it's really easy to say we're going to pick one or the other. And I always consider myself an and person. If we dig a little deeper and look for solutions, there's no reason we can't have this and that. Listening to their testimony, there wasn't a one of them that come across striking me as what I refer to as a buffalo hunter mentality. To hell with it, we're going to fish to the last one and then we'll go over another hill. They all acted as though they were willing to work and look for solutions with some self-imposed moratoriums on catching fish. You know, there again, guys, I'm throwing it on you. We're going to need some solutions, some answers out of you too, but I'm going to stick with you on this because the only difference between these guys and me, we're just catty-corner across the state. And having had a recent episode with mountain lions where the I-5 corridor decided how many mountain lions I get to live with, I sympathize with you guys. And I think we really need to take it in that we need to work with these guys. The fish people have done amazing stuff, but I hate to throw these guys under the bus. I truly do. So, thanks again, guys.
And to all of you, thank you very much for your comments. Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to compliment everyone. As I was listening to the testimony, I was thinking, in the 10 years I've been on the commission, I think the level of information, the approach, the articulate expression of your views, this has been one of the best public input sessions I've ever experienced. 10 years on the commission. I'm very proud of you people because you're bringing to us a sense that our state's fishers want what's best for the fish. And that just gives us the motivation to go fight for the fish, to do all that we can to do exactly what you are asking us for, which is lead by example. So thank you so much. I felt like applauding you all. Because your testimony was truly on a very high level. I appreciate that. We don't always see that with our stakeholders. Sometimes it's too much me, 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 give me, give me, give me. But in this case, I didn't hear anybody saying we should do things that would undermine the wild steelhead stocks. I heard everybody saying, do what we need to do, regulate us, protect these runs. So kudos to all of you. That was terrific. One more thing I wanted to say was that in the past couple months, I've been contacted by various people who are concerned that we might be rushing into making some decisions with pretty profound implications in December. And there was, I mean, we considered a lot of rules that could potentially lead to pretty innovative restrictions. I wanted to reassure everyone that some of the tougher questions we've put into the longer term category. Steve listed those. Those are going to be the topics that we'll continue to want you to dialogue with us. We're going to have to look at the various mechanisms we can use to achieve whatever we want to achieve. So stay tuned. When we decide in December, we won't be deciding all of those issues. We have begun, one way that we want to draw in your comments is by, we'd like to invite you to review a document that has been drafted by a number of us commissioners that will provide direction to the department on these longer term, bigger picture strategic concepts that we won't be able to make decisions on in December, but we want to carry on. We want to promise to you all that we will continue to think about that bigger picture, longer term agenda in front of us. So we've got a draft document, which we'll post at our website, and we would like your feedback. This would be something that the commission might entertain to approve in December, which just sets the agenda for further discussion. So we invite you to take a look at this commission direction document that we'll be considering as a way for all of us to put our heads together and lay out what more work we need to do.
This is how it's supposed to work.
Yep.
You know, we've got people on the water, on the ground, everyday professionals that have come together and taken some really contentious issues and have spent hours discussing them, come to us and say, this isn't a consensus, but this is a package we can all live with. We recommend this to you. And that's what we're here for, is to hear that. And I want to thank you all for the time you spent developing this package. It makes my life so much more easy. This steelhead, I've got piles of paperwork. I've been studying this for a long time. I'm an avid steelheader myself, as Aaron knows. And you've really helped me develop a decision. And I want to thank you all for the voluntary time that you've taken to develop this package. This is how it's supposed to work. Thanks very much.
And that's from the fish and magician. Anything else?
Brad, really quickly, a lighter side. One of you made the offer about come over and spend a day with you. You need to be really careful making those offers in public. You might be held to them.
What time's dinner? All right, well, again, you've done yourself proud, so thank you. And we're